This is PFW in Progress.
What do we have now?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
And you will respect my authority.
Paul Perillo.
Don't be jealous, guys. This doesn't mean we can't still hang out. It just means that I matured faster than you.
And Andy. And Andy?
You're the one who always plugs up the toilet at our house.
Andy Hart.
Hey, fellas. Hey, fellas. Eric said you gotta come to his house right away.
Tell him we're busy.
Well, he knew you'd say that, so he told me to tell you that you don't want to miss it.
Eric Scalavino. For now, anyway.
Guess what I have sitting in my backyard?
A trampoline?
Better.
A boat?
Better.
A hobo?
Better.
Well, what?
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
All right, welcome to PFW Progress. Is that your first opening that you've done, Dan? No? You've done others? That's good. That's good. Is my mic on?
It is.
Okay.
Is mine? I can't hear myself.
Turn up your volume. So what's going on, guys?
Hello? Hello?
It's a big win, and a lot of people, including kind of us, said it was almost a must-win if the playoffs were to be reached. And sure enough, the Patriots came through in flying colors. It was a tight game, I guess, up until the second half, but then the Patriots started to pull away, and really it came down to which team was going to screw up first, because
right.
Neither team could really stop the other team's offense.
If you like defense, don't go up back and watch a replay of this game, because there was no defense played, really.
I mean, the running games were pretty much non-existent for both teams, but when they spread them out and wanted a pass, neither really team had an answer, but the Dolphins just didn't execute a couple less times than the Patriots, and that was the key to the game.
Yeah, the Dolphins had a couple penalties that shot themselves in the foot, a couple different drives.
Yep.
And they threw the interception to Merriweather in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Those were kind of the difference.
And the difference is, the Patriots did the same thing in the first half, but it was in the first half. And they had time to make up for those. And, if they hadn't turned it over, they might have scored on every possession.
And they turned it over. It wasn't the Moss play, he went for the ball and kind of got batted up in the air and ended up as
a good play.
Pick. It was another example of him throwing a pick in the stat column that wasn't necessarily him throwing a pick.
Right, right. Morris's fumble was just a bad fumble.
Was a good defensive play.
It was, but you just can't let someone strip the ball from you like that.
Right, but it wasn't careless. Did I just get louder all of a sudden? It wasn't careless with the ball. I mean, that was ripped out of his hands by a big guy.
Yep.
But the bottom line is we saw another outburst of offensive play from the Patriots with Matt Castle doing something that, now four other quarterbacks have done in the history of football.
Back-to-back 400-yard games.
And now has two 400-yard games in his career, which is one more than Tom Brady, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play and the record setter from a year ago, has achieved in his career.
Obviously, we're going to get into that today. The talk now is...
Trade Brady.
It gets to that extreme, and of course, signing an extension to Castle now or franchising him after the season. There's all kinds of talks now about what now with Matt Castle. I might go on a little rant about that a little later. But
is this rant involve worry about the Steelers?
No, but it's natural, I think, to talk about that at this point. I think it's
useless to talk about it.
It really is useless. And, I heard, I think it was Dale Arnold on the radio yesterday.
Speaking of useless.
Saying
ooh.
That, the Patriots really don't have to worry about it because they can wait to see if Tom Brady is able to play. No, they can't.
No.
Because they have to make a decision on Castle by the end of February.
Right.
And by that time, you may not have any more idea about Brady's rehab or ability to play come spring or summer than you do now.
But I agree with the sentiment that you can wait till then.
Well, you can wait till then.
I mean, you'll
and that's kind of what my rant is.
You'll know if the infection has some way come back. You'll know if Castle fell off the face of the earth over the last month of football. I mean, there's some things can change between now and then, but you certainly can't wait to see is Brady fully healthy and ready to go.
Belichick has said it before. With a lot of these decisions, personnel decisions, if you don't have to make the decision, don't. Sometimes time kind of takes care of that. Matt Castle doesn't have to make a decision right now. If the Patriots came to him today and said, look, Matt, we want to sign you, we want to extend you now, and of course they're going to come to it with a reasonable backup signing long term, even if it's a couple million, Matt Cassel should say no.
Right.
There's no reason why he should sign anything right now.
And there's actually no reason why either side should think about it.
Right.
Because it's wasted energy. They have a season, they have playoffs to try to, and any energy spent thinking about, I wonder what will happen X, Y, and Z, is wasted energy.
That's right. So this is to be concluded in February when it comes time for Matt Cassel to sign a new contract or become a free agent.
That doesn't mean we won't talk about it, though, right?
Because no,
talk radio is kind of about wasting energy
for a
couple
hours.
Of course
we can talk about it, but, you know, I mean, 2 months ago, people were like, oh, you got to sign Dante Culpepper and all this stuff.
Well, 2 months ago, Matt Cassel sucked. Let's be honest. In the preseason, he sucked.
He didn't play well. Yeah.
And now he's
I didn't think it was as bad as everybody
good.
Else did.
I thought he sucked.
Paul, you were saying, you know, when it was time for roster cuts,
I didn't think
why not
was,
keep Cassel?
I didn't think there was much of a chance of him getting cut.
Yeah.
But I was.
But you certainly weren't arguing Castle's still significantly better.
There's no way that anyone could say that he was going to play as well as he's playing.
No, yeah. No. I was just going to say it's a far cry from saying that I didn't think he should get cut and that I thought that his preseason was better than most others from I thought he could throw the ball for 400 yards back-to-back weeks. I thought they could fall behind 24-6 in a game, a big division game on national television, and they'd be fine. That they could go. To me, the most striking thing was that how could you possibly have envisioned? You know, the Jets game was one thing. That was born out of desperation. They had to do what they did that game. The plan Sunday was to do what they did. That was the plan. They went down to Miami and said
he went 5 for 6 on his first drive.
But he's done that a lot of games. But the plan was we're not going to run the ball. We're going to spread out Miami.
We're not going to have a running back in the backfield half the time.
Yeah. And they threw the ball, what, 43 times?
43 times.
Plus a couple of sacks, so yep. 45, 46 times. That was the plan going in, and I don't know anybody that could have envisioned that 2 months ago. You know what? There's going to be a big division game that the Patriots are going to have to win down in Miami, and if they lose it, they're going to be in real big trouble, and they're going to do it on the arm of Matt Cassel.
But you used the phrase for the Jets game, born out of desperation. Obviously, you're trailing in the game. You got to
right.
try
they
to
had
score
no
points.
Choice but to spread it out and
don't
throw it every play.
Don't you think, to a lesser degree, this is born out of desperation and an admission that we're going to have to score points to win. We're seeing that the defense, the secondary, isn't very good, and we know we're going to have to score. This is our best way to score.
But to me, the fact that they determined it was their best way to score, to me, is striking.
But are you saying as opposed to the Indy game where the game plan was totally different?
That's what I'm saying.
Totally different than this game.
I think you're going to see them spread it out more often than not the rest of the way.
Well, now that they know they can, I think most teams' weaknesses are in the defensive secondary. Might as well take advantage of it. You know, if you
I
can.
I think it's more of a discussion on their secondary. I think they know they're going to have to be able to score points quickly at times.
And I think they also know that it comes down to their team, what their team does. Not only what the other team does. I mean, I know that Bill's a game-plan guy, and I trust that. But they can't line it up and run it and put up the kind of points that they're going to need to put up to back up Andy's point. They're going to need to put up points every game. They're going to have a hard time winning 21-17.
Well,
they're going to have a hard time winning those kinds of games now, the way the secondary has played the last month plus. They seem to be getting worse, not better. And it doesn't make any sense, but that's what's happening. So, to me, they've decided, I don't know if we can put up enough points by running the ball to win games. So we're going to have to find a way to score a little
bit better.
By
running the ball, if you run successfully, you extend your drives, you limit the amount of possessions in the game. So it still comes down to just merely, you know, maximizing your opportunities.
They will do that against poor run defenses like Indianapolis. They will still do that, I think.
Yeah.
But I think more often than not, if they have a choice, this is going to be their course of action. I think Andy's right.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the phone number. I want to give a shout-out to Ethan in Woo! Delaware,
Good
who
job,
provided
Ethan.
A lovely lunch from D'Angelo's. And because of his, beneficence, I should say. I'm gonna
I don't
read
know. Where's
email.
Eric?
Why? Well, you're rolling your eyes at me.
Because you're using Eric words.
Why can't I use Eric words?
Because we're dumb. Eric's not here.
Where is Eric?
He's off on Tuesday.
He's off on Tuesday. Really?
Yes. He comes in on Monday. He takes Tuesday off.
I thought that was changed now.
Based on what?
Well, we have less people, so.
Well, we still need someone to cover the Monday press conference, don't we?
Yeah. So let him do both.
Well, hey, I'm not the boss.
Anyway, Ethan
the boss.
Says, happy almost Thanksgiving, gentlemen. Paul, remember to pace yourself. Thanksgiving dinner is a marathon, not a sprint. Hopefully today's lunch will help you warm up for the big day.
Thank you.
I was sure to include an extra Diet Pepsi for you.
Thank you very
much.
Since
I know you need
there is an extra
to go to the distance. Yeah, and these are big ones,
yeah,
too.
These are the 20-ounce.
This should last Paul till like, you know, 12:15. Fred, I'm terribly sorry. They only had bottles. I asked specifically since I know how much you cannot get enough of it in the can. Maybe the chips can help make up for it, but try not to crunch too much while the mic is on, please, for all our sakes. Andy, I am not going to take any shots at you today, given that your two best friends were fired, and I am not referring to Mike and Gary. Lori's comments on her breasts will certainly be missed from the show, as well as her on-air confessions on your unendowment. Well, I'm going to skip past Matt Castle and the franchise tag questions.
Lack of endowment.
As we will undoubtedly cover them ad nauseum until March. I will almost move past the questions on how to improve the secondary, since I think at this point it is what it is. I will instead ask about the linebackers. Maybe it was just me, but they seemed to struggle a bit on Sunday, which is odd, since they have been pretty consistent in improving. Is this more a function of the game plan, which had them in coverage a bit more, or due to having so many of the rookies playing significant time, or are we seeing a bit of the rookie wall? I'm hoping that it is more of a function of the rookies being asked to do more, since it really has the biggest chance of improving as they get more playing time. Anyway, promises to be a tight fight finish here down the stretch, but I do believe that if Matt can keep up his Brady impression and exploit the Pittsburgh defense, and the defense can get some pressure on Roethlisberger, then there is a better than even shot of winning on Sunday. I really believe that the Patriots need to win this upcoming game to have a decent shot of getting into the playoffs, so we have the desperation thing going for us in this one as well. Anyway, enjoy the holiday and enjoy the lunch. Ethan, don't think about it, from Delaware. Say, I always say his last name. And PSO, obligatory gay reference about Eric so he doesn't feel left out. All right, so
thank you very much, Ethan.
Thank you, Ethan. What about the linebackers, says Ethan?
Well, I think there's probably an element of truth to all of the points that he made, and I don't think that Sunday was the best game for that group. I would agree with that also. But the number one thing that stands out to me is you're asking them to do a lot more things. The responsibility, you know, we saw Gary Guyton about, what, 15 or so yards, 20 yards downfield on that wheel route to Ricky Williams. That's a tough matchup for anybody, much less an undrafted rookie. We saw Gerard Mayo asked to go about 25 yards downfield to cover a tight end, David Martin, early in the game. I looked at Andy. I said, I'm sorry, but you just can't expect him to be able to make that play. Not only, and Andy pointed out, not only he was 25 yards downfield, he was 25 yards downfield on the sideline.
Yeah, I think someday he might be able to make it. But
I just think that's what separates Brian Urlacher from
right.
the rest, of the NFL.
Linebackers that can do that
Derek
come
Brooks.
Along like once every 10 years. I think that's nearly impossible to ask guys to do that.
So I think there's an element of, yeah, they are, they've been, the responsibilities have been greater. They probably are hitting a little bit of a rookie wall, especially Mayo with all the snaps that he's taken.
How do you monitor that?
You can't really do anything about it. You can monitor it and try to prevent it.
Yeah, you can say, wow, he's playing a lot of snaps.
Right, but I mean, what are you going to do? There's no time to rest. They need every one of these games. You know, for all that we said about the must-win game last week, it's a pretty big game this week, too. You know, you have a chance now. If you can win this one, you suddenly get off kind of off that bubble and into we can really be a player in the playoffs.
Right. I don't think the Jets are going to win out.
They certainly have a lot of momentum. But when this five-game stretch started, starting with the Indy game, the three AFC East games in Pittsburgh, we all said if they go three and two, they're doing pretty well.
Right.
Well, if they win this game, they're going to be 3-2. The problem is one of those losses came to the Jets. If they had beaten the Jets, you could say, oh, they could lose to Pittsburgh and still make the playoffs. Now it's a little bit more complicated because one of those losses came to the Jets.
You're right. You're right, because that puts you in behind the eight ball in the division, and now you're kind of looking at a wild card,
right.
Unless the Jets slip up in a game that they really shouldn't slip up.
Well, you still have a good chance.
Yeah, well, you know, you still have a chance.
Because 11-5, you're probably going to be in the playoffs.
No, but you're looking at a wild card more than likely.
Right.
Whereas, like Fred said, if they had beaten the Jets and lost to Pittsburgh, you had the same 11-5 record,
right.
But that's probably a division winner.
Right. So it's a big game. I don't think it's quite as big as the Miami game, but it's a big game.
No, I think if you lost the Miami game, you were in big trouble.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. This is a big game, but not, you know, it's not do or die like Miami was. They would have been in real, real trouble.
Well, let's
at
talk
6-5.
You know, it's Tuesday, so before we get on to Pittsburgh, let's just talk a little bit about this Miami game. What surprised you in this game? Was there anything that surprised you in this game?
That I was right and Randy Moss had a big game, because rarely when I go watch the wild card and it never ends up working.
That's my surprise is that the Miami's decision to pretty much single him all game long. That surprised me.
And not only single
no
him,
teams have really done that in
Jared
a long time.
Jared Allen is a safety – Jason. Damn it, I'm being Fred Kirsch again.
He is a safety.
Is a safety
trade.
Corner type guy. And to ask that kind of a guy to just run with Randy Moss and play him, more so than just making single coverage, but doing it with that guy, that's tough.
And well, you know what you saw too is that you can have a plan and a guy can be all – I mean, obviously, there's guys in this league with a lot of talent and a lot of pride. And Jason Allen started that game as competitive as you could be with Randy Moss. I mean, he was there. He was in and out of the breaks. He caused that interception by being close enough to sort of bother Moss and knock the ball in the air for the interception to happen. But what you see is when you do that for 60 minutes, just the wear that Randy Moss can have on a guy, he was more and more open as the time went by, right to the point where the last touchdown – probably got away with a push there. I mean, I like the no call. I just kind of like when it happens. The fact that it was called defensive pass interference is an atrocity.
I thought it should have been a no call.
I mean, can you imagine if that pass is incomplete and poor Miami has to deal with a 29-yard penalty on a play where their defensive back got accosted? But it shows you how difficult it is to keep a guy like that under wraps one-on-one. And it was not just Jason Allen. That player was Andre Goodman, I think.
Yeah.
Will Allen was around as well. Ronaldo Hill was involved.
Right.
He can't be singled.
Now,
you can't do that.
One thing I'll disagree with Moss, though. I mean, I know what he's saying about being disrespected. How could they do? But really, that wasn't a disrespect to Moss. I think they disrespected Castle. Because what they did is said, we're going to do this in hope that Castle doesn't recognize it, that doesn't get him the ball. And that's what they underestimated. They didn't underestimate Moss. Hmm. They underestimated Castle to not recognize it every time and get and deliver the ball.
But I think that's quarterback one.
Why'd they single him last year?
No, but that's where they were taking the risk. They were saying, you know what? We're going to take the risk. We're going to sometimes take away the middle field, Welker, you know, Gaffney. We're going to take that risk and maybe – Castle won't get the ball there.
Nah, I don't know about that.
Well, obviously that's what they were doing.
According to Bill Belichick, they were doing what they do.
I know.
Unfortunately, they don't do it well enough to do it against Moss.
I think they know how good Randy Moss is.
But I think they know Matt Castle is enough developed that he can recognize where the safety is and whether he's over the top or not.
You pick your poison. You know, are you going
to – Right.
And other teams have done it other ways.
To me, there's no decision to make. There's no poison to pick. I'll take – making sure Randy Moss doesn't beat me
and
the other way, because they never score 48 points when they do it that way. So to me, that is not a decision.
Right.
I might lose the game. I might lose 24-20.
Bill Parcells made the wrong decision.
I might lose 24-20, but I'm not going to lose 48-28.
No.
I mean, if you had told Miami they were going to score 28 points, they would have probably felt pretty good.
Yeah.
28 at home, the way our defense has played recently, they probably would have felt pretty good, but you can't do that to Randy
Moss.
It's
like the Patriots in San Diego deciding, okay, we're going to go one-on-one and not play too deep. And
yeah, was that disrespectful to Phillip Rivers?
Right.
No, that was respecting LaDainian Tomlinson. That's what they did.
Well, who were they respecting in this case? Matt Castle?
No, they just didn't play
very well.
That's
what they do, that they went into the game with their plan. I think it was an ill-advised plan. I think any criticism you want to make of Miami is valid. I think it was a foolish game plan.
Yeah.
Foolish. And
plus,
the Patriots ripped it apart.
They had Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Jabbar Gaffney, and Kevin Faulk all had season highs for receiving yards. So, okay, let's just say they thought their best case scenario was Randy Moss, we'll give him his plays, but we're going to take away all the other weapons. They failed in that.
Well,
they didn't take away anybody.
Exactly. That was just poor defense.
Well, and also
great offense.
A good game plan by spreading it out.
Great game plan.
Playing with that empty backfield a lot.
They didn't get any pressure. They didn't do anything well defensively for Miami.
I mean, I can't.
They didn't even stop the run.
The number one thing for me was they completely blocked Joey Porter.
Well,
and that's where it all started.
Not only that, but how many plays did you see Joey Porter ahead of the play and the play go by him? because he was just upfield too fast, and Kevin Falk just go right by him, and he was too far ahead of the play to make a tackle.
I also don't think he's an elite pass rusher. I know his numbers are huge, but I think he gets, if you really broke it down, I think he gets a lot of his sacks off of matchups with a running back or matchups with maybe a tight end.
He's a fraud.
And
certainly
I think
was on Sunday.
I think he plays hard. I think his passion is not fake. There's nothing about his passion that's fake, and he's going to keep going no matter what. You knock him to whatever. And I think he gets sacks because of that. But in terms of Jason Taylor can line up, and a step and a half later, he's got your quarterback on the ground. I think Porter is more like Roosevelt Colvin. Yeah, he puts up double-digit sacks,
the one
but he's
sack
not elite.
He got, and Andy and I noticed this immediately at the game, he guessed the snap count because
right.
he was
oh,
off,
he, yes.
he was not offside. He was
no.
not offside.
I mean, but he, was,
he just timed it
yes.
perfectly, and that was the only time he beat
he
Matt
got around
Light
Light's right shoulder, and he had an incredible jump on the ball.
That was the only yeah. one all game. And
that's the kind of jump Strahan would get. Strahan was really good at that.
That, to me, was the key. If you were going to go in with that game plan with five wide, and as Andy said, an empty backfield, that means Falk's not around to help out. The tight ends, you know, are there, but that's a tough game plan to go in with. If you don't block it right.
Right.
And they blocked it right for most of the game. They had a lot of pressure early, but even that kind of slowed down as the game went on. And Castle made the right calls. And how many times did Castle talk about, you know, it's easy to throw it out there. Well, Matt Castle's a different quarterback today than he was back then. Well, if those were specific plays that you could see, the play doesn't go off as planned. He has to pull the ball down and scramble. How many plays did he make? Moving around. This game as opposed to the first time these two teams
met. And
there
was one drive, I think it was early in the third quarter, where Miami said, you know what, we're going to actually send more people on this drive. We're going to get a lot of pressure. And they did. And it culminated with Castle having the pocket, you know, collapse on him, getting the ball away just in time. And that was the one where Moss just snatched it out of the air.
That was a third and 10.
Third and 10.
Yeah, that was a big play.
And that was the drive where – you know, Miami really, really tried to blitz,
and if
blitz,
I'm not
blitz,
mistaken,
and it didn't work, and that was it. I think that was the drive that did it.
And I'm not sure if I have this sequence right, but I think that might have been the last time the Dolphins had taken the lead. They had had the 21-17 lead at the time.
Yeah.
And if not, it was 24-21.
To me,
Patriots.
That was the turning point.
So that was
the
a
game.
huge conversion there to make them kick a field goal as opposed to a touchdown, which they eventually got. Every answer Castle had in that game.
Yep. On the phone, John in L.A. John, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Great.
Good. That was. It's nice to listen again when we have a win. It's harder to listen when we lose.
Now we get paid either way.
Either way. I have a theory that I think I'm probably overthinking it a little bit, but I wanted to see what you thought. Patriots go down sort of big in the Jet game. Out of necessity, they sort of have to start throwing a little bit more and spreading the field a little bit more, and that goes well, and we don't end up winning, but we're productive on offense, and maybe that's sort of the clinching moment for McDaniels and Belichick to trust Castle. And then we see that same kind of game plan this week, and so it continues. They're sort of like, you know what, this worked last year. Looks like it could maybe work a little bit better than we've been giving them a chance to do.
It's certainly
or
that.
Am I overthinking it?
Well, no, you may not be. I mean, you certainly, you know, until the guy does it on the field, it's an uncertainty.
Right.
And that was the first time he had to really come back from a big deficit, you know, against the clock, and he did it. And I think that can't help but give his coaches confidence.
Right. There's a difference between, and I believe them when they say we've always had confidence in Matt.
Right.
But
seeing his belief.
Yeah, seeing it out there on the field just strengthens that confidence to not only do it when you need to, but say, this is the best scenario we can put out there against this Dolphins team. Let's just do it.
Right. And I think we're going to, I think we're going to kill the Steelers. I really do. I mean, I don't know kill.
Well,
I think we're going to beat the Steelers.
Based on
double
what,
team.
Though? I mean,
because every year we hear how great the Steeler defense is, and they are. And then they play us, and they have a tough time. They have a tough time defending what we seem to be doing well right now.
Well, that was certainly the case last year, and I put that on one guy, actually, and that was James Harrison, who I was supposed to be this defensive player of the year guy, put pressure on the quarterback off the edge. Now they have two guys, and I think that's a tough matchup, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but if Matt Light gets suspended against these two outside linebackers, you could be in some serious trouble.
That is true. But here's one of the things that adds to the Steelers' mystique, and it's not really mystique, it's earned. But one of the things that year after year kind of makes the Steelers look good is they do well against the weaker opponents. They really dominate weaker opponents. There's never, you know, they have a suffocating type of defense that a lot of teams have trouble with, and it makes them look that much better.
I do agree with you, your larger point, but I am going to bring up something that's going to kind of contradict that a little bit. They dominated the Giants this year,
and that
Giants offense is pretty good.
Yeah.
They haven't struggled against real good offenses this year, for the most part. That defense has been pretty good. And to me, the difference is, first, what Andy just said about the bookend pass rushers, and second, I think they're getting better play out of the secondary than – I don't think much of D'Shea Townsend and Ike Taylor. Who's the other guy that was hurt?
Bill
McFadden,
Gay.
Bryant McFadden. William Gay played last week. Two gay cornerbacks, by the way, in the National Football League. So I don't think much of this, they're cover guys in general, but they have played pretty well this year. They're physical. They're bigger. Bill talked about this a little yesterday, and I think they tackle well. And if you can do that against this spread attack, I think you're going to have some success. If you can get pressure, get the ball out quick, and then tackle, I think the Patriots will have a harder time moving the football. I don't anticipate the big plays that they got last year when they were really killed that Anthony Smith, you know,
right.
With play action and double passes.
Right.
I don't anticipate that.
Well,
the staff can't hit those. I mean, so far.
Well, he did a pretty good job on Sunday.
I think that hole, he can't throw the ball deep is
I mean, that 30-yard bomb was perfect.
Yeah.
And he's had passes earlier in the year that I thought were on target.
He's had some that are overthrown. But,
right.
But so
do
so
all quarterbacks.
Yeah, of course they
I mean,
do.
We spent 3 years saying that Brady couldn't throw
right.
the deep ball.
Right, right.
You know? So, I look at the way the offense is played, and I said this going into the game on Sunday. It's amazing to me that I go into a game like this against Miami on the road, and I say to myself, I know the offense is going to move the ball and score enough points to win. I don't know if the defense can win it. And the game unfolded exactly like
Pretty
that.
Sure the defense can't win any games.
No, I don't have any faith whatsoever that if you're in the teens, you're going to win. I have no faith in that defense.
Yeah. Okay, John.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
John and LA.
See you, John.
Killing the Steelers.
You know, another...
and then he goes, I don't know about kill him, but he backed off pretty quickly.
Something else that kind of happened in the waning moments of the game, of course, Matt Light got into a fight with Channing Crowder. Looks like he's going to get fined. The question is, will he get suspended? We talked about that. If he's out...
What do you predict? What's your gut feeling?
I say no.
I say no, too, because
I say yes.
Andy and I both saw a play that was remarkably similar.
And if he does get suspended, I'm going to bitch because of this.
Yeah. With Cincinnati and Jacksonville, the only difference to me would be the specific holding of the hair while pounding away.
But
that Light was
the
doing.
Actual
he's
infraction.
Go with uppercuts, though. You can't come over the top. You got to
Logan Mankin said that he was doing a pretty good job pounding on his head.
Well,
and, you
the
know,
guy
so kudos
came around
to
laughing,
that.
So it couldn't have been that bad.
No, I know. I was.
Got to come up
facetious.
Because he's.
I don't think he's going to get suspended.
Get him in the mouth.
I hope it's not for this game anyway. If he's going to get suspended, let it be for the Seattle game. You know, maybe they won't make a decision quickly enough because usually it's by Tuesday.
Yeah.
If they don't inform the guy by Tuesday, they generally don't do it that week. Maybe they'll look at the tape and say, you know what? You know, it's a big game this week. We'll do it. We'll make a paper example
out of
them.
Were the Patriots running up
week.
The score in this game?
No. Definitively no.
Well,
for
Vince
me.
Wilfork thought they were.
Because,
well, they were rubbing
no,
it in. But
I think it was intentional because of the way Miami was acting. And to
right.
me, that's a difference. When Joey Porter's out there giving you 33 yards, all right, what do you want me to do, take a knee now and stop?
Right.
What do you want me to do, kick a field goal?
And
well,
Porter,
like everybody else would have, yes.
And Porter
that's,
mentioned
that's
that, you know, in our game, we didn't pass the ball at all. Well, they didn't pass the ball either at the end.
Seven
they
straight
just kept
runs
running
with Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis.
And by the way, you stopped them every time. They only scored because of you.
Right.
Seven carries for 20 yards.
Right.
That's stopping them.
Right.
So all you had to do was keep your mouth shut, and you would have gotten off the field. It didn't matter anyway.
And now there's word out there that he was called off the field and refused to leave the field.
Who?
Porter.
Porter for, even for him, went loopy
in
that last 10 minutes. I had more players tell me that the referees were constantly warning him, and he just wouldn't stop. See, holding the hair right there, they're showing it on ESPN right now, and I think the only thing that would be out of the ordinary to me was the holding of the hair while pounding away.
Ah, so what?
I don't think you should be suspended, Fred. Yeah. I mean, you get in a fight, it's football, you got ejected, that's the punishment.
This was the best part, though. They both left the field at the same time and almost met at the tunnel because they both had to leave through one
Light
end zone tunnel.
Light had this big Cheshire grin on his face, Cheshire cat grin, and then people started throwing things. He put his helmet back on.
See, is that why he put his helmet back on?
Yeah, someone threw
I would have figured that he was going to the tunnel. So he
thought he was getting ready to fight again.
No, someone threw something at him.
He only fights guys with their helmet off when his is on.
Well, that's why I can't make fun of Channing Crowder. He lost his helmet and he immediately started retreating, and it looks like he was kind of being a coward. But if I lose my helmet in an NFL fight, I might get out of there too.
Yeah.
You know?
So
you think you said no?
Running up the score?
No, suspension.
I don't think either one will get
suspended. I think he's going to get suspended. The league hates the Patriots, you know.
Well, that's true.
Why do you got to feed it to him?
Well, we know they do because look at after that Jets game. All the high-fiving the Jets.
That's right outside our studio, Fred, where they were celebrating.
What was the explanation on that?
That often league officials congratulate the home team after the game. But
the
winning
team, you mean?
But Ray Anderson doesn't say to Brett Favre, I told you, I told you.
Oh, that's what he said?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did they ever announce who the other guy was that they were complaining about?
He looks like Red Auerbach. Yeah. That's all I know.
That's who they kept referring to him as, Red Auerbach.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that Barney Rubble.
Fred,
what an actor.
Is there any doubt in your mind on a personal level that a lot of people hate the Patriots?
Outside of New England? Of course they do.
There's a difference between on a personal level hating them and the league, quote unquote, the shield being against the Patriots.
I think the shield is. We've caused them a lot of trouble just because that we're.
It made them a lot of money, too.
Well, yeah. Well, any winning team will. So if it wasn't us, it'd be somebody else. But, you know, we call them on things. You know, we're always walking the envelope. So we cause them a lot of distress because.
I've never heard that phrase before in my life.
Pushing the envelope is the phrase.
Walking the tight wire, whatever. Pushing
walking
the
line, pushing the envelope.
We lead a horse to water
beating
a lot.
We beat the bushes, and we walk that envelope all the time.
And find a lot of diamonds in the rough.
Right. You know, and we've got a few bushes in the hand. But, you know.
I like a good bush in my hand.
I think that for certain people in the league, I think that we're kind of pains in the ass.
Pains in the ass.
Too bad.
I think there's
too bad.
But I think there's truth to that, and I can understand why. I don't condone I didn't see any of this, but I don't condone that behavior. That's ridiculous. They would say, in other words, I'm glad you won. See, I told you.
I told you.
That's flat out wrong. Now, if Ray Anderson was thinking to himself as he sitting there watching the game or whatever, geez, I like to see the Jets win. You know, those Patriots, I'm tired of them. I have no problem
with
that.
Keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
Exactly. I have no problem with that mentality. The show of
it's
out
like,
and out
it's
rooting.
Like you guys. I like you all equally, and I hate you all equally.
Well,
I don't favor anyone.
Yeah, I was going to say the opposite.
I think you hate Eric more than you hate them, too.
No, I don't hate Eric. I Eric is right up there with them. These guys.
And on the hatred scale.
What? No.
So are you saying you love Eric?
It's all equal. Of course I do.
Hey, this Giants-Cardinals game was a pretty good game, evidently, huh?
Giants-Cardinals. Yeah, it came down to the wire. Yeah.
But I mean, the Cardinals played them pretty tough. A lot of Giants were saying that they got – every time they felt like they were in control, the Cardinals refused to quit.
This might be one of those games. You know, the Cardinals are going to make the playoffs, and this might be one of those games that kind of to themselves was
affirmation.
Proved a lot to themselves. Yeah, sure.
Could be.
You know?
Could be. And Warner threw for like 350 yards again. Yeah. So it wasn't like they got shut down. That's going to be a tough game. That Arizona game here is going to be a tough game. Unless there's really extreme weather conditions, I think that's a tough game.
Yeah.
But you know what?
With those receivers?
But we haven't looked at it from the other perspective, Andy. Extreme weather conditions might not be the best thing for the Patriots right now either.
That's true.
That's right. Who's on the phone right now?
Mitch in Florida.
Mitch, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Mitch.
What's up, Mitch?
Hello, all, and happy Thanksgiving and
you
so
too.
On and so forth.
You right
too.
Back at you, big guy.
Thank you.
Are we at the game Sunday?
Of course.
Okay.
I'm in Tampa, a suburb of Tampa, Palm Harbor. Palm Harbor, so... Anyway, I just got one thing to say about Joey Porter, and you know, I think he spends too much time running his mouth and waxing his dolphin. You know what I mean?
All right.
And can I say that?
Is that a bottlenose dolphin or the kind you eat?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
I really don't want to know. I got a question. I don't know if any of you saw the interview on ESPN with Keyshawn and Joey Porter.
Yeah, we saw the transcript of the quotes.
Right. Okay. Now, you know what was said, obviously.
Yeah. It's in PFW this week, in case anyone wants to know.
Okay. Now, of course, we also know that Sheriff Goodell has the right to, anyone who has anything to say, like with Randy Moss a few weeks ago, whatever he had said, you know, he was going to be fined for it. I mean, I suppose you could even be suspended for things you say. But my curiosity is, how can he sit there on a national interview and basically say that the Patriots, and you guys were just touching on some of this and why so many people hate the Patriots and, you know, all this shit that you're flying constantly.
Oh!
You know that... Oh, did I say
you
that?
You can't say that, man.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Anyway, that, you know, that they cheated. But, you know, I think it was Vince Wilfork on EEI yesterday had said that, hey, you know, they supposedly caught them in the first game, and then they won 18 games in a row.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but you know what, Mitch? And this might come to a surprise to some people, but he has a right to say that. I can't blame him for saying that. The league's the one that destroyed those tapes.
But that's where he might get in trouble, is he kind of pointed the finger. Not so much, you can call the Patriots cheaters, but he pointed the finger at the league.
Well, that's
being
my
complicit
point.
In
Too
this
bad,
cover-up.
Though. The league destroyed those tapes, and you do that, and you're really asking for trouble, because now it's not transparent. The process isn't transparent. And anyone that questions that after the fact has a right to.
And the league has a right to fine them.
No, I don't think so. I think that would be really.
That's what I'm trying to say here is.
I don't think they have a right to fine them.
I don't either.
He's basically questioning
the integrity of the league.
Roger Goodell's decision.
Yeah, but he's
just
questioning
a decision.
Goodell
he's not questioning
the integrity.
Yes.
Goodell did that to himself.
Right.
He opened up that
can. It's no different. When you question the integrity of the officials, you get fined.
Well,
when you question the integrity of the league, you don't.
But I don't think he's questioning anybody's integrity.
He's
questioning why they covered up a scandal.
But he's saying, why did they destroy the tapes if they weren't that bad? That's what he's saying.
Right. He's saying they covered it up.
No. He said, why wouldn't you think that they covered it up when they do that? And I think he has a right to say that because that's the facts. You know,
now,
why
wouldn't I think an official's on the take when he makes up a rule about an underhand pass being an illegal forward pass? But if I come out and say, that guy's on
different.
The take, he made up a call,
I think
I'm probably suspended.
I think it's a little bit different. I think you're not comparing apples to apples there. I can't stand Joey Porter any more than the next guy.
He's my most hated guy in football.
But I think in this case, he has a right to question what they did, and that's all he was doing.
I just didn't like his arrogance.
I don't either.
I hate him.
I hate
the guy.
I can't stand him, especially on a team that all of a sudden, you know, like, okay, they've won how many games? Four?
Six.
Five, six. Oh, wow, six.
Yeah.
You know, six, 7 years later, all of a sudden we win six games and we can run our mouths.
You know, but the thing about that, and I don't want to dredge up the whole Spygate thing, but do you know how much trouble could have been avoided if they hadn't destroyed those tapes?
Right.
I mean, come on. That was just
a dumb move.
Realistically, I've talked to a lot of people online, you know, just kind of rebutting on different, you know, sites where you can add your input. And my feeling is sure, okay, maybe they had taped things that they weren't supposed to tape, but realistically, when it comes right down to it, how much of an advantage can you get by knowing what someone did in a game that's been
we'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know, and I don't want to get
we'll
into that
know.
Whole thing. But
it's a can of worms.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's not open it. But as far as Joey Porter, we agree with you. He's an idiot.
I hate him.
He's an idiot.
And it was nice to see him. And I loved Logan Mankins after the game. Rather than taking the high road, he just said, "Hey, you know, 55 wouldn't shut his mouth, and we shut it for him."
Right.
And he wouldn't stop. The referees kept warning him, and he kept going and kept going. And it was nice to put 40-plus points on the board and rub their noses in it, rub their faces in it. God bless Logan Mankins for telling the truth, because, you know, that's the way they all felt.
I just wish Matt Light had connected on one of those.
Well, like I said, he's got to go uppercut. When the guy's facing down, hitting him in the back of the head.
It's like
this guy's head is probably as thick as...
It's like I used to tell you when I was a season ticket holder at the old Foxborough Stadium, and we had the tunnel that goes underneath this section was right in front of us. It was a cement wall. And the guys behind us were always drunk and always falling on us every game. So my brother used to tell me, if they fall on us and we get in a fight, don't punch up. You're working against gravity. Pull them down. We'll smash them into the concrete wall, and then we'll just start wailing on them.
Right.
That's
the Everett way.
Right.
Listen, guys, take care, and great job, and talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, Mitch. Thanks for the call.
Mitch from Florida calling in. Webradio@patriots.com. We'll be right back.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer. Fred's the boss, the chief, the leader of the PFW in Progress clan. And while he often goes on rants about fun facts, Skype, and making $5 the hard way, he sometimes has interesting things to say, or at least when you can hear him.
PFW in Progress.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. I just got yelled at because I didn't have my mic on.
Why don't you put your mic on?
Welcome to PFW. I had my mic off again.
Again.
Two shows in a row.
Turn your mic on, Fred.
Oh, I should remember to...
As sure as the stars shine above.
And Fred didn't turn on his mic.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress.
That's the longest you've ever gone.
And now, back to PFW in Progress. That is, if Fred remembers to turn his mic on.
That's good, Dan. I like it. Good work. You had to do some research there, though, huh? What do you mark each one? Fred didn't turn his mic off on today. Is that what you do?
It wasn't that hard to find.
I was going
to
say, it's really not that difficult.
Pick any show, and I'm sure there's at least one example.
This kid's a son of a bitch. All right.
Hey, can I, before we get back to the Dolphins and everything, Fred?
Yeah.
You know how one of my huge pet peeves is clock management?
Right. You don't like to manage it.
Another, yet another example of an overmatched NFL coach, Norv Turner, calls timeout in the last 2 minutes, facing a 4th-and-2 before they line up for the game-tying field goal Sunday night. And that gives, what, 30, 35 seconds to Indianapolis, and you lose.
Right.
Because you give Peyton Manning 35 seconds, and you lose. You give Adam Vinatieri a chance to kick a 51-yarder, you lose.
Yep.
Just
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to call timeout, don't you then have to go for the first down?
Yep. I think, you know, you bring it up all the time, Paul. Most of these coaches.
It's amazing.
For you know, 50 minutes of the game are pretty much even. It's that other 10 minutes of the game that separate good game, you know, game day coaches.
I don't think it's that hard either, I got to tell you.
It's the same thing with quarterbacks. Most quarterbacks can hit an open receiver. It's when you, you know, third down conversions, two-minute drills, coming from behind. That's what separates it. And it's under the clock pressure of coaching. That's what separates the good
coaches. But in my opinion, it's a lot harder to be effective at watching tape and deciphering what you think could work best against a team. And formulating a game plan and figuring out how you're going to call your plays, both on offense and defense, than it is to sit there and say, well, there's 4 minutes left in the game, and I need two possessions. I'm going to do this. Or there's a minute and a half left, and I'm facing a third down here. If I don't get the first down, I've got to make sure I get right to that line, kick my field goal, you know, whatever. Or I want to actually milk the clock. Even right. though I'm losing here, I'm going to take as much yeah. time off the clock as I can. Yep. It's not that hard.
Well, for under pressure, you know, some of these guys, they don't think straight. So, on the phone, Joel in Merrimack.
Phone calls today, Andrew.
Joel, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
It was a good game Sunday. I was, with the obvious exception of the secondary, I was pretty happy with that one. I'd love to see Castle put up about 400 yards every game. I think that'd be kind of neat.
That'd be a record.
So would his agent, because the price goes up every day.
Oh, I'm like I said, the franchise thing is going to be talked over and over and over for a while, especially if he keeps putting up these kind of numbers.
Right. But, he's going to get paid somewhere, whether it's here, there, or anywhere.
He's definitely going to get a good contract. There are too many teams out there right now that are in desperate need of a quarterback.
And I would rather pay Castle. Who really only has 1 year of wear under his belt, and draft a rookie high as a quarterback and have to pay him similar money and know less about him.
That's almost a no-brainer right there.
Yeah. Plus, you've gotten him after he's had 3-plus seasons being coached by theoretically the best coaching system in football.
Yeah, he's been basically a redshirt quarterback in the best program in the world.
Somebody else has molded him, and you get to take him.
I didn't get any reaction.
Quick thing, guys. People are talking a lot about running up the scores. At the end of the season, if we're tied with the Jets or if we're tied with Miami, don't we lose by virtue of the fact that they scored more against us than we did against them?
No.
Oh, I thought when it came down to if, like, we were tied with – what's the size of that, then? If Miami – if the
points,
Jets and the
points,
Patriots are tied.
Points scored is like the 11th tiebreaker.
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, what's the first tiebreaker, then? Is it conference record?
Head-to-head.
Oh, head-to-head.
Regardless of points. And if that's a tie, then it's against common opponents?
Opponents
okay,
would be second.
Okay,
conference opponents.
Point. Yeah.
Okay.
Then you get,
I didn't
like,
know exactly what points came in
there's
there.
A lot of things. They're way down the list.
Okay.
And then it's points in, like, division games and conference games. It's way down the list of I don't know if it's ever even gone to that in the history of tiebreakers.
I doubt it.
I can't ever remember a time where my favorite part of that every year is when you look at it's like 10 or 11 things listed, and then the last one, coin toss.
Right.
I love that.
That's like high school. Do they meet somewhere on the side of the highway and just flip a coin? And...
Yeah, mutual site. Yeah, neutral.
Having said that now, the Pittsburgh Blitz worries me.
It should.
I'll tell you something. With Harrison and Woodley, it worries me.
Well, the problem is also it's not just blitzing. They can send either one of those guys on any play.
Yes.
And because they now have the two guys that are putting up double-digit sacks, you can't really slide your protection and give too much help in either direction because you're automatically weakening yourself on the other side. So.
Yep, and you never know what Polamalu is going to do.
Right. I mean, they have the 3-4, which brings the normal problems of the 3-4. You never know who the fourth and fifth rusher are going to be.
Yeah.
But they can also just rush four, drop one of those guys, and if those two on either end are Woodley and Harrison, that's a tough matchup for Kazier and Light.
For Kazier and Light.
Or potentially Mark LaVor if Light gets suspended.
That's the whole thing. Another thing I think you guys were mentioning that usually if it's going to happen, it's going to happen by today. And I haven't heard or read anything yet.
Yeah, we should find out either way today.
Yeah, it's usually like before 2 o'clock because the guys, they have to find out by the practice or.
Well, I heard some people talking about this a couple of weeks ago. They like to let people know personnel by Tuesday.
Yeah,
So that way the coaches have an opportunity to
both
adjust
teams.
Their game plans and do the things that they need to do to know that they're going to not have a player. If it's beyond Tuesday, we might not know about it, but they would know about it by Tuesday, is my guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
One more quick question.
Okay,
do you
Joe.
Do you think the Jets can run the rest of the season?
Yes.
Yeah, they can.
The question is, will they?
I looked at their schedule this morning. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. It is.
Well,
but
the AFC East schedules are very easy.
Yeah.
And that's the big problem. And I think that, you know, when you're playing the NFC West, those are teams that you're going to beat. And I know they have. I think they have Denver at home this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got Denver, and then they got.
One of their few, and they're both at home.
Yeah,
they're both at home. Those two remaining division games. So,
yeah,
that's big.
Yeah,
that's big.
It's real big.
I don't think they will win out. I don't think they'll go 13-3, but they're going to be favored in their last five games.
That biggest game was what the hell? Scott Zolak's walking out with an American flag. I don't know what.
He's American. Broadway's
all right, Joel. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. You guys have a great Thanksgiving.
Hey, you
all
too,
right. Joel.
We should mention,
by the
way.
A very happy show today. A lot of calls, a lot of optimism.
Hey,
We're not going to be on Thanksgiving,
we should mention.
Yeah.
What's that?
We're not going to be here on Thursday.
What? What's that now?
Andy's not going to be here on Thursday.
No, of course, we're not going to have
Neither will your producer.
We're not going to have a show on Thursday.
Look at the funny man lie. He made a joke.
So tomorrow we'll have the Qdoba question of the weekday, and we'll also...
No, big shaking head behind the glass.
What? What?
I don't think we're giving one away this week.
We had a contract.
I don't think so. I think we're week to week at best on that.
This just in.
We also will have to do picks tomorrow.
That's right. I was going to mention that.
Oh, boy.
So no Qdoba question of the weekday?
Oh, boy. I'm not prepared.
Okay.
Picks.
But we'll
picks
do picks.
Tomorrow.
Plus,
tomorrow.
There's three games on Thursday. We got to have in picks.
Right. This just in from Pro Football Talk, our friend Mike Florio. Steelers safety Anthony Smith was embarrassed last season when he guaranteed victory over the Patriots, and things didn't quite work out that way. But as the Steelers prepare to play the Patriots on Sunday, Smith is not done making guarantees. If they ask me again, I'll say the same thing, Smith told the Indiana Gazette per Adam Schefter of NFL Network. We're the number one defense, and if we play like we've been playing and our offense comes around and has a good game and we're clicking on all cylinders, we're going to win the game. Of course, the declaration of victory over the Patriots this year isn't as meaningful as it was last year when the New England was undefeated, and it's especially less meaningful coming from Smith, who was a starter last year but no longer gets significant playing time.
Yeah, I heard actually.
Why is he talking to the Indiana Gazette?
It's Indiana of Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And because I heard this on Dennis and Callahan this morning, they were talking about it, and Schefter didn't know. It was the segment that Schefter was on, who does a weekly thing with them. And Schefter didn't know about it. He goes, I'm gonna go write about that. He flat out said, I'm gonna go get that and write about it. So obviously he did. And Florio saw it with Schefter.
But that is the best part. They can't target him this year. He doesn't play.
Well, that's the number one thing. That doesn't matter. The guy doesn't play.
Right. But, yapping too.
But I thought it was dramatically overblown last year based on what he said, and it's even more so this year. Again, the kid is saying, if we play the way we think we can play, we'll win. What is so outrageous about that?
Yeah, but in this one, he also knocks his own team because he says...
Yes,
he knocks the offense. Our offense comes around and has a good game.
Yeah, he's knocking the offense.
So he's even knocking his own team. I mean, just shut up.
He's not a bright mind.
Stop talking.
No, he's an idiot. There's no question about that. But my point is, I don't think it's the same thing as guaranteeing a victory by saying, if we do these things right, we can win the game. I don't think that's guaranteeing... That's not Joe Namath. We're going to win, I guarantee it. That's not the same thing. But every time someone expresses any level of confidence nowadays, it's blown up to be a guarantee of victory. I don't think that was a guarantee last year. And him saying, I would say the same thing, I think we're going to win, to me isn't a guarantee this year either. But unfortunately, we won't get to see him bite on play action fakes and get embarrassed the way we did last year, because that humored me. I got humor from that, Andy.
Did you?
Remember when Gaffney ran by him on the play act? I enjoyed that.
That was the Moss to Brady to Moss back to Brady.
Mm-hmm. And he got beat on another one, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
He got beat on three, didn't he?
All right, let's get to some emails.
Two that I remember, maybe three.
I think three.
Got a lot of emails
coming
in.
He's a Syracuse guy.
But before we do that, another phone call. Anthony in Naples.
Hey, what's going on there, guys?
What happened to the music?
Yeah, isn't he supposed to have music when he comes on?
It's mini-gender.
That's two gender again.
He's got theme music, for God's sake.
No.
That's the wrong music. You suck.
The theme to the Godfather.
Hey, is the Hall of Famer Paul Perrault?
There we go.
Yeah.
What's up, Paul? Congratulations on the Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. Thank you very
Hello?
Much.
Hello?
Yep. Yep.
You're still here.
Did it sound like I got blown up?
Yeah, but he doesn't actually know how to blow someone up, so you're safe.
Oh, what the heck? I gave him kudos, too, but anyways. Sorry to hear
I
about
I was blowing
Gary.
Up the song. Not
What's
you,
that?
Anthony.
Yeah, sorry to hear about Gary. Is that what you said? We all are.
So was Gary.
Yeah, no, that's a bummer.
We're all really bummed out about it.
Yeah, that's a bummer, but he's a talented guy. I'm sure he'll get another gig. He'll be fine.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. But, so what's the debate today, guys?
The debate? No, everybody's just
relishing,
marveling at Castle's second 400-yard performance in as many weeks.
And whistling past the secondary, which is indeed a graveyard.
Yeah, joining Fred, do you know who?
The four other players?
Yeah. Yes.
Billy Volek, Dan Marino, Dan Fouts, and Phil Sims.
That's correct. You did a good job of reading. You did a good job of reading.
I had it in my story before you had it in your story.
Oh, okay. You probably
now,
did.
Now, Paul.
Yes, sir.
You kind of been poo-pooing me. Remember probably about 2 to 3 games in, I was saying, well, what if Castle does good? Is he going to get franchised? Is that percentage going higher now?
Me personally, no. But I know a lot of other people are on your side. I just don't think you can franchise a guy for 14-plus million.
We're not talking about franchising a cornerback or a lineman here. Quarterback number for a franchise is the average of the top 5 quarterbacks in the league. We're talking in excess of $10
million.
14. That's the number now?
It's 14-plus.
14 million for a guy who potentially is going to be sitting on the bench. No team can afford that.
Obviously, you didn't have that in your story
Fred,
before.
Fred, you forget the point, though, to franchise him to hopefully trade him away. Obviously, you don't want that money being held up on a backup quarterback.
Yeah, but you have to have the money
on
your
cap. You have to have that
money. You can't
tell me the Patriots couldn't find a way to find $14 million worth of space?
Of course they could, but at what cost?
But who are you cutting to do that?
Right.
Fred Kirsch.
But the percentage goes up each and every year. Somebody's probably going to be due. Maybe somebody else's contract is really not going to be that high.
They still have to renew Wilfork, right?
And well, they don't have to.
They don't have to.
No, they don't have to.
Maybe him. Maybe Seymour. We were talking about this upstairs. Seymour's, what do we say, 12? Seymour goes up to next year?
Something like that.
So there's some – listen, I'm not saying it can't happen, and I never said it couldn't happen. I just said I don't think it will, and if it was me making the decision, it wouldn't because – I just think it's too big of a chance to take, and I think you might have to do too much with the books to make it work initially. Even if you know that you can make a trade, you have to have that space available. And I'm not sure that, you know, especially heading into a possibility of 2010 where you have some labor unrest and the possibilities of an uncapped year or whatever, you don't want to get in too many untenable situations with your contracts.
Ray Ventrone's coming up soon.
it's just really, we lost that first round draft pick, you know, obviously because of an unneeded story. But anyways, it would just be nice to get something back. And it's just, I feel like it's a bonus with Castle. You picked him up for a sixth round pick.
I hear what you're saying.
For 4 years. I just feel like if you get nothing for him, it's like, damn it, how could you lose it?
I hear what
Plus
you're saying.
Plus 2 years in a row where you lost Samuel for nothing.
And not, you know, Samuel is similar, but, you know, Castle's a guy that really, you know, you could argue that Samuel was going to be good probably no matter where he went. You know, but Castle's a guy that you developed. He may not have got drafted if the Patriots hadn't drafted.
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate. I understand your point because someone was going to draft Samuel. He was a fourth round pick.
Right.
So someone was going to take him and he probably would have been okay regardless. Castle was really nurtured by the Patriots.
Yeah. So it is a shame to not get anything.
What if you made a trade where it was kind of like Brett Favre? You know, you trade him away real quick. You put the tag on him. You get something real quick for him. They make the playoffs. You know, you get a second-round pick. You make it to the Super Bowl. That type of contract. Just
they could do that.
Something really quick that somebody would bite on just to save themselves the time of negotiating with Castle and without the tag.
But you're taking a risk there because – first of all, you need the space.
Let's the Patriots say they clear still the space. Would need the space.
You need the space. Then another team, a quick trade is not.
No,
for
why would another team do that?
Right.
Yeah.
They need to give you, what, 2 first-round picks for him, right?
Right, but they obviously wouldn't get that. So he's saying,
make
a quick trade. But why would another – what was that, Anthony?
Well, you got everybody keeps saying you need to give 2 first-round picks. You don't need 2 first-round picks,
no.
Do you?
No, you wouldn't get 2 first-round picks.
You
I don't care
get
who
it.
You are.
I'm not saying you would.
But you would get the other team would have to be willing to make the trade without signing him under that guise. I mean, you have to be able to negotiate and make sure you can work something out. Like Jared Allen last year, Minnesota, they made the trade. They signed that contract that day. I mean, it's not like you make the trade and then two months later, okay, we've worked it out. What if they can't work it out? The team would be stuck.
I think it's possible. You know,
it is possible.
Funny that you
it absolutely is possible.
Minnesota,
and if it is, the
Patriots
will figure it
they
out.
They need one.
What was that, Anthony?
I was just saying Minnesota, I think, is actually one of those two top teams that would be highly interested in Castle because they have a GM in there that I think he's going on his fourth year next year, and he needs to make something happen because obviously they're suffering that quarterback position. Now, they're 6-5 right now, but obviously there's a little bit of a weak link in that position
for them. They need a quarterback.
Is it within
no
the rules right now for the Patriots to talk to a Minnesota and say, look, this is what we're going to do. We're gonna franchise him, but we'll do a deal with you right now.
Well, you can't do a deal right now.
No, I don't mean execute it, but in just a verbal agreement, this is what we're going to do because we want to get something for him.
I don't know
guys
why
want
that
it
wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Right, that's what we talked about last time. At any point between now and the deadline.
I would be doing that.
Well, I'm sure that they will be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure they're going to be doing it before the season's over, but I'm sure they will be once the season
but
is
have
over.
Have a plan. You know, maybe Anthony has something there. Maybe.
But it doesn't matter how fast. Like, everybody's overlooking the speed angle of it. It doesn't matter how long it takes to get a trade done. You need to have $14 million
in
cap
space.
You
still need the space.
The speed matters in terms of using that space after you trade him, once free agency starts. Once whatever else you want to do in free agency, if you have him then off the books again, so you can use that $14
million. Sure.
Yeah. Hey, I got one other thing, guys. Have you been talking about the Dean Pease situation?
What's the situation?
Do you feel like there is a situation?
Did we miss something?
Well, I just found it curious. I know, I guess it was more like strategy so he could take a look at the whole field, but I heard that he was up in the coach's booth versus being on the sideline calling out the defensive plays.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think that was a result of him getting caught with his pants down a little bit the first time with the Wildcat and the unbalanced, and he admitted on the record the week after the first Miami game that they were slow to react initially to what Miami was throwing at him, and I think that was part of it.
Yeah. Well, my thought is, I'm just wondering, I'm not making any accusations, but do you think maybe he'll be looked at because of all these college positions be opening up for head coaches? You think that they'll probably not necessarily encourage him to maybe take a college job and move somebody up because maybe it's just not working for Bill?
Well, funny, Paul and I just discussed that upstairs with a couple other people about the potential of Romeo Crennel becoming available to come back, the potential of not necessarily running Dean Pease out the door, but just saying, Dean, you might want to look into a couple of these college jobs that become available.
Yeah.
You've been at that level a long time. You might have a personality that's suited to that level.
Well, it's very interesting. Something I've noticed the last couple games is after the Patriots' first defensive stand, Bill Belichick, rather than watching the offense, abandons the sideline and goes to the bench and huddles up with the defense during that whole drive. And spends all his time with the defense after the first series. And he doesn't do that with the offense when it comes off the field.
No,
after
he spends much more. He always has spent
but he
much
always
more
has.
Time with
he,
the defense.
When Romeo was here, he would always be over there. I mean, you must have seen the endless video footage. That's always on all those highlight tapes is how much time he spends with
I'll go back to 01.
Especially with
slants
the linebacker.
And in cuts.
No,
this game is about slants and in cuts.
But this
with
seems
St. Louis.
To be a pattern now, not just going over there when he sees something, but the routine now is after the first defensive series, he goes with the defense to the sideline, to the bench, and works out what he saw.
But wouldn't that make sense? I mean, that's your first opportunity
to see how he hasn't always done that.
Are you talking like specifically one series?
Yeah, after that first series.
I mean, I can't comment that it happens at a certain time, but I will say definitively it happens every game.
Oh, absolutely.
Every game.
Well, don't you think this is actually better?
But now he's doing it after the first.
But I don't see it happening on offense. I only see it happen on defense.
Just on defense.
Because every game that I've ever seen him coach, because he's a defensive coach.
And I actually think this is better.
Go ahead.
Well, I just questioning Don Capers. You guys say he's mostly sticking with the secondary, correct? He's not putting any type of influence, you think, on the sideline? I can't really see the whole field,
no
obviously.
Idea.
Well,
really.
We just went on the visual of practices, what we saw in training camp and various. He's with the defensive backs. It was not like he was a de facto defensive coordinator. He was with the DBs all the time.
Certainly didn't look like that, but we'll never find out from Bill.
Sure, he has input in meetings and halftime and all that.
Yeah. Because, like, looking back on it, maybe he was brought in to help Bill a little bit more. Maybe he felt like he wasn't getting the help that he needed through DMPs. I'm not making any accusations, but, you know, it's just...
Kind of sounds like you want DMPs out of here, Anthony.
Mr. Pease has to go. No. It's not that I want him out of here, but I just something's not right with the defense, and I don't think it's all necessarily the players.
I just don't think they have enough talent. I mean, I'm with Fred 100%. I've been like that. I've been thinking like that for 2.5 years now. But Andy, how about, you know, Bill goes up to Dean and says, "Hey, Dean, that University of Washington job, huh?" Yeah, so well, maybe you should be interested in that.
I don't think
it's
a laughable.
That's all I have to say. I'll stop chomping on your ears anymore.
All right.
Good stuff, Anthony. Amazing. Thanks.
Okay. Hey,
but
Todd.
Fred, I just want to get back to, you know, I didn't want to cut Anthony off. You want another question. But getting back to the when Bills with the defense thing, isn't it a better sign maybe or could be taken as a confidence if he's doing it one specific time? Okay, Dean, I'm going to be over there after the first series so we can go over the game plan, what they've come out with, and make initial adjustments rather than in the past he's always over there per
se. Yeah, maybe.
You know, we have a calculated time where we're going to see what's going on out there.
But, you know, I also looked at it as a boost of confidence to the offense because he doesn't even look at the offense in that first series. He's got his back to the field with the defense after the
I think
defense.
He leaves the offense to Josh.
Yeah, I think
so. And I felt like that for a while.
That's huge.
And he definitely left it to Charlie.
Yeah.
When Charlie was here.
Todd makes a point. Even if Castle leaves, we're going to get a third-round compensatory pick. No?
All depends on how much he plays.
Right. And who you sign. Right. I mean, if you signed, I don't know who great free agents are going to be, but if you signed some great free agent.
If you signed Adalys Thomas, if you sign one guy and lose one guy, and you signed Adalys Thomas and you lost Matt Castle, those are going to probably cancel each other out.
And it's
They're
also
going to play a lot for their teams.
It's a year removed.
Right.
Because they have to play and they have to
do the following year, exactly.
So it's you wouldn't get anything this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think the
but if Castle
ideal case.
Compensatory picks stink because you can't trade them.
Right. I would think the ideal case is you trade Matt Castle for a one this year. Because you're sending him in all likelihood to a bad team, so you want the one as soon as possible while they're still bad, while they're still picking in the top. Now you have a mid-20s and a 11th pick in the draft. Now you have the ammo to move up, or you have the ammo to add two players on defense. I think if the trade scenario goes out, you want to get that done as soon as possible for this year's draft.
And believe it or not, early indications from our lads says it's a pretty good draft for the defensive secondary.
Well, I
as
think
opposed
that's,
to the offensive secondary,
I think
which
that's,
is weak this
well,
year.
Well, sometimes they do that. You know that DC.
It's a wasted word. Glenn Ordway uses it every time he talks about the secondary,
all right.
The defensive secondary, because the Patriots are strong in the offensive secondary.
Listen to him, will you?
Al Fecto writes in, love the win, of course, and in terms of the offense, let's just hope we don't lose Kevin Faulk. He's probably the offensive MVP so far, even including Matt Castle, and it showed on Sunday. I don't know what his final stats were, but to me it doesn't matter. The guy does a little bit of everything. Otherwise, the sound you hear in the background is the sound of Matt Castle's agent operating his calculator. Ah, hell, let's just keep Castle and trade Brady the Lions for two number one picks and their best player, if there is one. Besides, that sets up Tom to run for governor of Michigan. I'm joking, of course, but you must admit Castle is a better runner, and he seems to be getting more and more accurate with his sidearm throws as he rolls out. I thought his best pass was to Moss, delivered soon enough to allow Moss to make a quick move and eventually get into the end zone. All of a sudden, each of the rest of our games seem winnable. I'm not saying we'll win them all, but the two toughest games remaining are both at home, Pittsburgh and Arizona. Maybe the toughest game may end up being out in Oakland, the second half of our second West Coast trip this year. So,
I agree wholeheartedly with Al there. I think that all the games, but I felt like all the games were winnable anyway. The only game I really went into really not feeling they had a good chance was at San Diego. Every other game, I felt like they had a reasonable chance. I think it's a product of both the Patriots pretty good, and the league is just okay. There's no Patriots of the past that you look at, and there's no Indy of the past. Indy is a good team right now. They're not great. They're not Indy of old. You know, I watched them Sunday night. They win now because they're used to winning, and they find ways at the end to win the game. That's all they do. They're kind of like the old Patriots before they got dominant in 04. They just find a way to win. So I look at any game as winnable.
Sure.
But I also think that most games that the Patriots are going to play are losable as well. If they don't play well and they're not sharp and avoid mistakes, I think they can lose to anybody. Don't you feel like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any game is winnable and losable.
I mean, I certainly didn't go into games against the
Breaking
Bills.
News here at Patriots.com.
Well, I was just going to say, last year, Andy, I didn't go into games against anybody in the division and thought even for a second it was losable. Well, all six division games were losable this year. And, you know.
And, of course, it's easier to lose.
Right. Well, you taught me that.
Chris Porter is the Boston Sports Fan Group of Seattle president. He runs it. And he's going to have some gatherings going on in Seattle for people going out to the game. If you want that information, I'm not going to read it all online because...
F Troop.
F Corps.
Yeah, email webradio@patriots.com and Dan Twogender will forward...
Didn't he just do that?
Well, he'll forward you what you specifically want. Just email it and say, I'm looking for the Seattle fan
information. And he'll forward
Dan
that email.
Will forward this email to you.
Oh, yeah. How did...
You got that, Dan?
He hasn't moved one iota back
there. What are you
watching? He doesn't have to move until someone sends something.
He's so comfortable back there. He's
a little
leaning back in his chair, watching TV.
Speaking of that, how did the Orange 14 tailgate party go?
I don't know.
You didn't get any feedback from any Chris Insiong?
I thought we had passed that Orange 14, too, coming in.
Oh!
Did you see
that?
Miami's a famous place. It's not quite up there with Buffalo, but the fans on the other side always give birds, throw things, do various things. There was a guy with no legs in a wheelchair, like practically, I don't know if jumping is the right word, but jumping out of the wheelchair to throw double birds at the bus we went in. It was great.
Andy was very excited about that.
Great.
Good for him.
You don't like that? I like the passion.
Good for him. Frank, just...
You don't like passion?
Did you hear about the guy with no legs in the water?
He sank.
Bob.
That's classic Kirsch right there. I love it.
I thought those were Eric's two best friends.
Neil
and Bob.
Robin Dartmouth, let's consider the unthinkable. We should seriously consider trading Tom Brady now for several number one and two picks to an NFC team.
All right. Several number one and two picks.
So three ones and three twos?
You ain't getting that.
Wouldn't it be funny, though? Like if somebody came to Bill and said, that Brady, I'll give you three ones and three twos.
I'd do that.
I think Bill would, too.
I'd do that in a heartbeat.
You'd at least have to think about it. I mean, it seems unthinkable to trade Tom Brady, but if somebody's going to give you some ridiculous trade.
At worst, Castle is a bust. Okay? At worst, Castle is a bust as my starter, and I have three number ones and three number twos to fix that. Brady's only going to be around another 4 or 5 years.
Plus, he stopped competing 2 years ago.
Yeah. But
right
you would be amazed, Fred.
Touchdowns.
You'd be amazed at how many serious emails we've gotten over the last 2 days. Suggesting that they should do just that.
Oh, I know.
Because people are worried that the end is near with Brady. I think a lot of the injury, the travel.
One thinks he hurt his foot surfing.
No, but I just think all the stuff we talked about in the spring, the fact that he wasn't here as often, he was in. People, you were worried, Fred. You said you thought there was a chance that he goes away and loses the zest for football. You were opposite me.
I did.
Yes.
You were worried.
Okay.
You were worried the whole offseason.
Right, and then when he got hurt, Fred goes, I think there's a 3% chance that he decides he likes life without football, and this could cut his career short.
And based on his actions so far, I think Fred's concerns were founded because he hasn't done anything football-wise.
Stripper says that he heard a Miami sports radio show say of Castle that he's bigger, stronger, and more mobile than Tom Brady.
He's definitely more mobile.
I don't think that's arguable, but...
I think about the same size.
They're virtually the same.
Yeah.
Now, I think Castle probably looks more nimble. You know, I mean, first of all, he hasn't been hit. So even though Brady didn't have much mobility to begin with, he's been pounded on for 9 years now, too. So I think he's going to look better, but I don't have any problem with that characterization. Do you?
No.
He's definitely a better runner. Yeah. I'm just going to look up their sizes that they listed in the media.
Alejandro from Bogota.
That thing's useless. It says Vince Wilfork, 325.
6'4", 230 for Castle and 6'4", 225 for Brady. So they're the same.
He's bigger.
But they are proportioned a little bit better, different. Castle has a longer torso and shorter legs than Brady. Brady is more proportioned.
Yeah, but they're both very skinny.
Yeah, they are.
Neither one of them is...
You notice that?
Neither one
I have.
Castle has, you know, Michael Phelps, the swimmer?
Michael Phelps.
He has the Michael Phelps type of body. Castle does.
And that's longer legs?
No, shorter legs. Shorter legs and a longer torso.
Yeah, I know.
That is so gay.
It's just true, too. Alejandro from Bogota.
It's just true, too.
Hello, Fred, Paul, and Andy. Let me be the first to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, you're not the first, sorry.
But thank you anyway.
Here's a little game. Guess who said the following on Patriots playbook? Number one, John says, well, the Patriots have a 13-game winning streak against the NFC, and the co-host says, not including Super Bowls, right? Who said
Mike
that?
Parenti.
That's Parenti. Correct. Number two, John says, text messaging is really getting over the top. The co-host says, you would imagine that a society who develops so
Eric.
Many different... Yes. And number three, John says, any information on the Pats? The co-host says, not really.
Eric.
No, Brian.
Oh, Brian Lowe. I didn't know he was in the game.
On to football. Can you talk a
That's
little
That's a great game. We should incorporate that every week.
What was the... And a society, you would imagine a society.
Oh, it goes on. Believe me.
It only took 3 weeks.
It ends with...
I can name that person in three
I
words.
I heard the word society and knew it was Eric.
It ends with, we are breeding a non-confrontational society deprived of emotions. That's
what in the hell?
It ends with that. On to football.
Eric's got
to
go.
Can you imagine how long it would have taken him to come
I have that? No formal artistic training.
And he had a guy that went to music school just to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think
my
I,
son TJ in the background.
I pushed Connor into the piano last night, and I think we did that little tune.
You a little physical in the Kirsch household last night?
We're getting into it now.
Not surprisingly.
Well, now he's starting to have a little heft to him, so I can throw him around a little bit more.
Okay. But all in fun.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay.
But not surprisingly, you have a piano to throw him into because only rich people have pianos.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Have you seen the piano?
No.
The dog chewed one of the legs off.
It's still a piano. You started out with a piano. I don't have a piano.
It's an upright
Poor
piano
people
that
have
our
a
neighbor
Casio.
Gave us because they didn't want it anymore.
Poor people have one of those Casio-like keyboard things.
He was handed a house. They gave him a house with 40 acres.
And indentured servants to work on
God.
The land.
There is no piano in that house. I'd like to get Jackson to play
Not
a
from
piano,
a lack
though.
Of room.
That's because your idea of culture is a thing of yogurt.
Oh, the lead balloon just joined the show.
You had such a good show. What happened?
On to football, says Alejandro. Can you talk a little bit about those regular season games against the Steelers? One, the Kevin Henry interception game, and two, the Bledsoe failed quarterback sneak game.
Oh.
Paul, why don't you handle these?
Well, the first one was one of the best games that I've ever seen, the Kevin Henry interception. 24-21, they lost in overtime. After that play, a lot of people forget this.
But Paul doesn't.
The play, the Patriots had a 21-13 lead. They had the ball around the two-minute warning or so. They were trying to run out the clock. They had a third and long, and they ran a screen pass. And it was one of those sort of indirect, you know, kind of misdirection screen passes back. And Drew started rolling and then just turned and threw. Obviously, it's a screen pass. You're just throwing it to the area. He threw it right to Kevin Henry, yeah. Who ran it back to about the 10-yard line. Now, people forget they had a fourth and goal, I want to say, from about the 8 or 9, the Steelers. And Yancey Thigpen made one of the most ridiculous catches that you'll ever see on the sideline. They looked at it for days on the replay. You couldn't really tell. And they ultimately ended up scoring. That might have been the touchdown. It might even have been the two-point conversion. I forget. But they ended up getting the touchdown and the two. They go to overtime, and Pittsburgh wins. The other game, the Bledsoe sneak, was his rookie year after they were 1-11. They went to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was really good at that time. Drew threw 5 interceptions in that game and still had a chance to win it at the end. They drive all the way down the field. They had the ball with time for one more play from inside the 1-yard line. And I'll tell you right now, flat out, he got in. They called it no touchdown. And Parcells didn't want to run the quarterback sneak, and I remember this specifically. And Drew kept saying, I'll get in. I can get in. And Bill didn't want to run it. And Bill finally said, all right, go ahead. And he didn't get in. And then, you know, Parcells, they were 1-11, so the lesson here was more important than the win.
Right.
He goes, okay, all right,
yeah.
All right. We okay now with the quarterback sneaks?
Right.
And, you know, they didn't run too many more quarterback sneaks on the goal line with Bledsoe after that. But how many years was it before he even had a rushing touchdown? It was probably – like 5 years before he got his first one.
See how much he has to say when you just bring up Bledsoe?
That's when I was a fan and I didn't have to be in the
have
press box.
Have you contacted
box.
Him about...
If I could actually see the games, I can't see the game anymore from the press boxes.
Have you contacted him about writing his bio yet?
No.
Oh, come on. You should.
No.
Why not? Take it. Do it.
Why would he... He's going to write a book?
Just out of curiosity.
Yes.
Okay, Fred?
Yes.
We're going to operate under the assumption that he doesn't know that I have this abnormal crush.
He's
going to
jump my butt.
Why would he want me to write his autobiography for him.
Why not?
I don't know. Wouldn't somebody like Ron Borges or
someone with a little cachet?
Vic Carucci. Didn't he come across him?
None of those.
Then I told Vic this. How about Vic Carucci's book being included among Belichick's favorites?
Yeah.
I told him that in the press box. I go, you got some love from Bill.
Yeah.
I go, he don't throw it around too often either.
Yeah.
It's one thing for us and Ask PFW emails to say, should the Patriots trade Tom Brady? But it was just one of the main topics on ESPN First and Take.
Yeah, that,
First and Ten.
That's what that show is. You think that we're
responsible?
But
what do you think Tom Brady thinks when he's flicking through and it says, should the Patriots trade Tom Brady? I know he's the most confident guy on the planet, but at some point it doesn't. Hey, like, they don't need me anymore. Like, what does he think? And I know he's rooting for Matt Cassel, but what does he think when Matt Cassel's doing things he never did?
Well,
I'm just saying he's sitting in some apartment with Giselle.
Hopefully he'll get him out of the apartment and over into the weight room.
You're down on him, huh?
Didn't he just do a shoot for Vanity Fair or something?
Yeah, well, that's not getting him ready for the next season.
I agree. That's why I said that your concerns are somewhat founded so far.
Maybe there's nothing he can be doing right now. I don't know.
I'm guessing
he could do curls. He could do curls.
But don't you think there is?
What?
The amount of time that he's been kind of TMZ'd, for a lack of a better term,
yes,
would be a little bit higher than I think that most people would have wanted to see.
Oh, God.
Sure.
You know, in the last month or two.
But they, you know,
I'm not talking about
his
defense,
they are camped out.
But I'm not talking about him not doing his rehab, because I'm assuming he's doing his rehab.
Right.
But.
Well, we've seen him here.
Fred, if he was here,
yeah,
TMZ wouldn't be camped out.
Right.
No, they wouldn't be. You're right.
It went down the hole.
Wow. Let's see.
We should probably tell him instead of just saying it went down the hole. Fred was playing a little
Eric's
game
not
with a cap,
here.
And Fred was doing it behind his computer and couldn't see it, and the little went right down the hole. And then he was reaching aimlessly for a hole.
Let's see.
Family.
Bill from North Carolina writes, and I think that Castle's exceptional performance as the season has progressed has at least put on the table the discussion regarding his future and how it is intertwined with Brady. No one can argue that he's closer to the beginning of his career than Brady is, and that someday the Patriots will have to face the post-Brady era. The double whammy will be the post-Brady, post-Belichick era. Should we consider facing post-Belichick with Belichick, post-Brady with Belichick at the peak of his genius? From that standpoint, one has to at least consider signing Cassel to a long-term deal, perhaps with the understanding that if not the immediate replacement, he is the heir apparent. Perhaps to start in 2010 after Brady retires following his winning 4 Super Bowl titles, unless Brady is unable to return as a healthy starter. I am not arguing that Cassel is better than Brady. Certainly Cassel is due for some rough bumps as he climbs the learning curve. But when considering what is best for the future of the franchise, it might be a mistake to bet that Brady will be healthy and can carry the load until his, as of yet unknown, replacement is identified and participates in the system long enough to be effective. I don't want to be a heretic. I love Brady, and what he has done for the franchise and the fans is incalculable. At a minimum, if I were Robert Kraft, I'd ensure that he has a lucrative position for life in the Patriots organization. But the team has managed to replace a long list of irreplaceable players in the past, and I think that Cassel being the future in New England is a worthy topic for discussion. Well, I mean, it's out there, guys.
I think there was some contradictory stuff in that email.
Okay.
Somewhere along the line early, he said, I'm not saying that Cassel is as good as Brady. And I don't think if you say that, I don't think anything after that needs to be addressed.
Right. We're not at the Brett Favre.
It's 31 to 26
right.
in age. So if you think that the 31-year-old is better than the 26-year-old, there is nothing to discuss. Now, if you think Castle's better, we have a discussion. We have an argument to be a debate. I don't, but that's, you know, the opinion. If you think Cassel is better or on par, then that's different. But if you think Brady's better, why would you make a move?
Because you're not sure of his health.
But why?
Because you're not sure of his health.
What do you know that we don't?
We don't know anything at this point.
Okay, well, I'm just going by what doctors are telling me.
Well, they haven't told us anything.
It's pretty straightforward. With torn ACL,
you've talked to the doctors?
No, that's what doctors say about torn ACLs.
But everybody's injury is a little different. There's no.
Well, I don't have any concern about his health.
In terms of his career. I don't either, but in terms of his career.
Now, when he comes back, whatever day that is, I think that's open for debate. But, I mean, in terms of him being Tom Brady in the future, I don't have a concern about the knee.
I don't either. There was a couple things in there, though. First of all, they've replaced irreplaceable players in the past. They haven't really done that. The guys that were irreplaceable, they kept. Richard Seymour would have been irreplaceable. They kept him.
Yeah. And
I just don't see the guys that they've let go that were irreplaceable.
Well,
the
other talked about Vinatieri.
The other part of it that irritates me about that is, are you better or worse for the certain players that you allowed go? Did you replace that guy with a better guy?
Well, Deion Sanders.
Asante Samuel and Ty Law. Did you replace those two cornerbacks with better players? No, you didn't. So you didn't, you know, you, this whole notion that if you win a game without those guys, it was the right move, to me, is laughable. Are you better or worse with or without those players? And in most cases, you're better.
Well,
but
can,
in some cases, you're worse.
But the point is, if you can still win without them, then they are replaceable.
They're first not, of all,
irreplaceable always, means if you lose them,
but who
you're going to lose.
But who is deemed irreplaceable?
Guys that you can't win without.
But who? So give me an example of a guy that the Patriots let go that was deemed by the public as irreplaceable.
I think Vinatieri and Deion.
People thought a kicker was
Deion
irreplaceable.
Branch.
No, because people just said, for X amount of dollars, why are you risking it?
Exactly.
It's not that much money.
It's not that much.
I heard a lot of people said
for peace
the first
mind.
Time that the new kicker misses, they're going to be screaming for Vinatieri. They're going to be sorry.
Right, and that's accurate. But the argument when he left was, it's not that much money. Why risk it? Not that he's irreplaceable.
Yeah. I mean, Brady, I would say that's absolutely is deemed an irreplaceable player.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, instead of being 11-0, you're 7-4.
What I think.
So are you better or worse?
I think you'd be more accurate to say the Patriots have lost a lot of guys to injury and have been able to keep winning despite that. But that's the different than losing guys
right.
to free agency and all that.
That's totally different. I totally agree with you because you're doing one by choice.
Right.
And, you know, when you let Ty Law and Asante Samuel go, you're not improved. Just because you might win games without those guys doesn't mean you're better.
By the way, Asante Samuel might still be on the table in terms of irreplaceable because they haven't replaced him.
Well, that's my point exactly.
They might
could
not
go
make
on
the
and
playoffs.
Win the Super, they could go on and win the
right.
Super Bowl. Does that mean it was the right move to let Asante Samuel go? They can't stop
right.
anybody in the passing game. They might
but
win games
be,
anyway.
Yeah. He has certainly not been replaced on any level.
That's my point about winning game doesn't mean if it was the right decision or not.
No, I know, but I just don't think there are really tangible examples of guys that they've couldn't win without that they let go and they couldn't replace. I mean, that they replaced them. I think a lot of guys they replaced, there were reasons to let them go. Age being some of them, or Lawyer Malloy slipping, you're forced into different things. But I don't, there's not that many guys that have been deemed irreplaceable. The arguments were different. Mm-hmm. The arguments were, well, sooner or later, you got to pay somebody.
Right.
You can't just let them all go. Or, why do you draft young players only to let them go when you develop them? There weren't a lot of irreplaceable. I think maybe Seymour, if you had let him go, people would have said, he's irreplaceable. He's a 3-time All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowl, irreplaceable. But a lot of guys that they let go were good, not great.
And, you know, Gostkowski has been a really, really solid kicker for them. Absolutely. But I don't think people said, if you let him go, you're going to lose.
Well, you know,
if you let Adam go, you're going
really
to lose. They just thought they should keep Adam.
It comes down to the sport of football. I mean, if you have good coaching and you have a good nucleus of a team, you can afford to lose guys because you play as a team. When the Red Sox lose Manny Ramirez, that hurts. You know, it's different in other sports because everything isn't as integrated.
It's a team sport.
Yeah.
There's
a
no
true
question.
Team sport.
No, I think you're right about that.
Which is why some guys that are good, that are irreplaceable, the place they go to, they're very replaceable because they left the system that worked for them. Or
yeah,
you know, maybe Deion Branch would have been great had he never left here.
Well, if he never got injured, he'd be good. But he always
no.
Gets
but I
injured.
Mean, maybe he wouldn't have got injured. Like you don't even know how things play
the
out
whole,
differently.
Yeah, the whole thing changes. I think it's very easy to sit there and look at all the success that the Patriots have had and say it doesn't matter who the players are, but it does matter who the players
are.
Sure,
it does.
Bill can't do it with nobody. He needs players to go out there and execute his game.
Well, how about this secondary?
We've
always said that he can do it with Troy Brown, Hank Poteet, and, well, maybe we're doing a disservice to those guys. Maybe they were Jags, but they were decent Jags, and Delph O'Neal is not even a decent Jag because they're not covering anybody right now. So to just say he can scheme it up in the secondary.
Even at the end of that game when it was decided, those guys were wide open. Teddy Ginn just
anybody.
Was dropping the, you know, Teddy Ginn dropped that pass that you said about, what is it?
Yeah,
come on, man.
Yeah.
That segment that they had on ESPN last night was a tribute to Teddy Ginn's missteps in that game.
Yep.
Which, by the way, what a bust.
He stinks.
What a bust.
You changed mid-game when I go in, this guy sucks, this guy sucks.
Well,
you go,
I didn't think
he can run a little bit. And then
no, I said he is fast.
And then one of them bounced off his hands, or the second one bounced off
catch.
His hand, and you go, yeah, you're right, he sucks.
Well, I did say that.
He's fast, but he's not quick.
He's not a good kick returner. He has
nope.
the speed
yep.
to do whatever he wants.
Once he gets going.
He's not good at anything.
Yeah.
Absolutely anything.
Paul from London writes in, hi, guys, and two gender. Just kidding, Dan. Just to give a couple thoughts on the game. Hey, Matt Light deserves his all-pro status for hitting Crowder. It's just a shame it wasn't Joey Porter. Did anyone else think that Crowder caused it, but Light finished it, and Crowder became the world's biggest word that Fred can't say but meows? I don't think he, you know, he got his helmet ripped off.
What did Crowder do? Because I
have no idea.
At the end of that play, he jammed Light right in the helmet with his open hand, and Light went back at him, and then his helmet.
Guys get jammed in the helmet
but
every play.
It was kind of like after the whistle. So he.
But it happens every play. It happens every PAT.
Matt Light took offense to it.
I'm not blaming Matt Light, but I didn't think that Crowder started
Andy
it.
Seems to
no,
be.
But if Channing Crowder had kicked him in the nuts, then I would have said, okay, he started it.
I don't.
And someone, to be fair, someone suggested
right.
that.
But to me, getting pushed in the face happens all the time
in
the offensive line.
He might have earlier. I mean, who knows?
That's
this might have been something that was bubbling up for
right,
the whole
well, that's
game.
What I'm asking. I didn't see anything that led
if
me
that's
to
why Light
that.
Did it, then I understand. But if it was just because he was getting blocked and got a hand in the face or whatever, I mean, that's a little overreaction.
You have to see it. It was with malice.
And he did rip his helmet off the back of his head and held his hair and started pounding on him. If anybody was the meow word, I think
well,
that
you,
was kind of
but
a...
But you got to come from underneath.
I think that was kind of a bitchy way to go about fighting. Holding a guy's hair and pounding
on
him.
There's no rules when you're fighting,
well,
Paul.
I know we're making
in
light
the street,
of it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really want him to connect on a punch.
Sure you do.
See, I don't. I mean, were you cheering when... What's his name? Rudy Tomjanovich got his face broken?
Well, that was different.
We all love to
yeah,
see
that was
fights,
different.
But...
That was a,
when there's
that
a,
was a sucker punch, too.
To me, when you're holding a guy's hair down, and if you come up like this, you can sucker punch him and break his face. And I don't think anybody wants to see that. I think that's a...
Well, if it was Joey Porter.
Okay. I just have no interest in
that. B, the sight of Vince Wilfork wobbling his way towards Pennington after breaking through their O-line may be the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I
know
agree.
Exactly the play you're talking
as well
about.
As him impersonating Porter after the turnover on downs with the kick. But he was the standout performer in the D, and I don't think anyone else had a great performance within that side of the game.
I thought the front was excellent again.
The front was
I thought
good.
Seymour
yeah, I thought
was
they all did well.
Seymour continued his strong play.
So did they.
And
Vince Wilfork said we did pretty much what we wanted to do today defensively.
Yeah, I
we
thought those
the
guys up front shut them down.
Yeah, so did they. Only they don't care what's going on behind them.
Nice to see Matt Slater almost get a catch as well as the variations of the five wide receiver set that
minute.
We saw early on.
Almost get a catch. The ball was thrown to him, but at no point did he almost get a catch.
Did he even get a hand on it?
It hit his body, but not because of him.
With the amount of receivers there, Eric must have had a field day. And finally, Castle has to be franchised. We cannot let that value go. Would the Raiders consider a trade for Ashimuga? Should they franchise him, which looks likely? And how big a bidding war can be caused by Castle being franchised? I don't know. We'll have to see.
Well, it's also going to depend on who else is out there. If Donovan McNabb is out there, if Kurt Warner is out there, Jeff Garcia will be out there. I don't know who.
Kerry Collins.
There's going to be a no. Now, personally, I think Castle has the advantage there because he's young. If you think he's good, then you've found your quarterback for an extended period of time. If Kurt Warner is good, which he's proven to be over the last year or so here, then you have him for a couple more years. So I think that's the big difference there as maybe a young coach, a young team looking to build long term. But the Vikings, they might want Donovan McNabb to put him over the top. They got, what's his name? Major Dad.
Oh, yeah. Childress, who he worked for. It's a good point.
Which, that might sway him the other way, by the way. He might know all that take goes into having Donovan McNabb on your team and want no interest. I don't know.
That'll be telling to see if they have any interest in him.
Well, if he's still a coach, too.
Billy Barry writes in, the Patriots,
my favorite.
The Patriots at Seattle was flexed out by the NBC. Instead of the night game, it will be a Fox late game. I'm ambivalent about the change. Well, actually, I'm glad I can get to bed earlier. Am I missing anything? Does it affect one team more than the other? And Eric, who probably isn't there, but is it effect or effect?
What did he say about the Fox? What?
It's now a 4:15 game instead of a night game.
Yeah, but it'll be on CBS,
is it
not Fox.
Is it Arizona?
We're playing Seattle.
Seattle? No, it'll be a Fox game.
Seattle will be in CBS game.
CBS, because it's the away team.
It's the away team.
Away team.
It's the away, yeah, and Seattle is NFC, right?
And we're away.
We're away.
We're an AFC team.
Oh, we're the away team. I'm thinking they're coming here. Yes, absolutely.
God, I wish they were coming here.
I just wanted
it'll be a CBS game. It'll be a CBS game.
Right.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to correct that for fans because a lot, especially the ones out of town, don't always get the schedules and stuff like that they might be looking for.
Yeah, it'll be a CBS game.
And no, I don't really think it affects either team in any way.
No, it's the only people that are affected are the great people that put together the publication. We're glad to have it be at four. Every little bit counts. That's 4 hours difference, and that's a big difference.
Who's this Lance Moore character?
Lance Moore.
The receiver
that's
making all
the plays. The guy who had about 4,000 catches in that game yesterday.
But it's not
70
just today.
Touchdown.
He's been making plays for like another month now. So
yeah, I don't know.
How come the Saints keep getting these receivers that come out of nowhere?
I just wonder how –
Did he play at Northeastern?
No. I wonder how Drew Brees can, set records and they just don't win any games. I wonder, I just wondering how good he is.
Well, they won yesterday.
Yeah, well, they're 6-5, and they'll lose next week because that's what they do. They win one and lose one, win one and lose one. They stink. The Saints stink.
Yeah, I don't think
they're
that good.
Game behind the Patriots.
Steven is in Oregon. He's calling
you
our show.
You from that with you,
Steven,
Will.
How you doing?
Steve!
Hey, it's me. How's it going, guys?
What's up, you?
Oh, not much. Good game this week.
Yes, it was.
I thought it was very productive on the offensive end, but I still think our defense there was a little shaky for a long time.
It's more than a little shaky. The secondary stinks.
So, hey, Andy, what do you think? You think Kevin Fox is going to come around and those diminishing skills will
sooner or later he's going to slow down. You mark my words. Might be a couple of years, but, yes, he's been phenomenal. I know. I deserve it. That's why I said, I joked earlier, that I predicted Moss would have a big week this week. My biggest surprise was that Moss had a big week, because rarely when I say a definitive does it come true.
Yeah, I've been keeping my eye on him because I'm very interested to see, just I feel sometimes he's mailed it in, but then again I feel other times he's not mailed it in. He's gone up for stuff like that, even like when a game was out of hand, like back in the San Diego game with like 2 or 3 minutes to go, he leaped up and caught a ball over the middle.
What the fuck?
I'm like, what the heck did you do that for? You're going to get killed.
I don't think
we're down by 20.
I don't think Moss often mails it in when the ball is involved, like when it's in the air, when there's an actual athletic competition. I think at times his attitude
tries to get too cute.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's one thing.
In San Diego, he got too cute.
He has techniques that involve not putting his hands up, not looking at the ball, all that. But I have no problem with those because they worked last year, so I'm not going to criticize them now when they don't.
It's good enough where you give them the.
Now, I think he dogs some plays when he's blocking or it's going the other way. I think he takes some plays.
But I've
I think
also on seen routes make when he some knows. Nice seal blocks.
Yes.
To
me, it's
blocks.
Less blocking as it is receiving when he's not involved. Like Andy said, when the ball is in his direction, you don't see it.
Because he's an athlete. He takes over and says, I'm going to get the ball.
He is so smart, and he can read defenses so well that I think he knows before the snap that there's no chance the ball's coming his way.
He has the exact same pre-snap read as the quarterback.
And there are times when he knows that, it seems to me that he says, screw it. The ball's not coming my way in this play. They're rolling the coverage here. There's nothing I can do. Matt's going to go the other direction. It's not going to affect the play. And I think there are times where he's been guilty of that.
And I think probably, 70% of receivers might do that. Or
and I also,
50%.
Yeah, I also
some
think
number.
It's overblown because it's Randy Moss.
Right.
I actually think linemen give each other a nod sometimes and take plays off.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, yeah, I did play a little bit of football, but, we did that, in practice and stuff. Hey, it's not coming our way. We're doing something different, Just relax and we don't kill ourselves and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like he's playing with a different kind of toughness the last couple games, and I wonder if he feels like, I guess game and a half or so. Because I wondered if, he's feeling better with Castle and – seeing the way that Castle is moving and the way that he's distributing the ball now. And
I think you can't help but think that that's the case.
Plus, he knows it's a passing offense. He sees that, we're spreading them out. There's going to be a lot of opportunities. Yeah. I'm going to be balls to the wall to make sure I get my share of those.
He talked about how hard the week was this week, too, because they were on the turf, because they were inside pretty much every day to simulate the heat. And practicing 4 days on the turf, knowing they were going to have 4 and 5 wides on the field the whole game, which meant very little rest for him. And I'm sure that put a little jump in his step.
Sure.
Because he knows the game plan is all throwing. That's what more can you ask for a receiver?
He played a good game. I thought he made a good move on that out there when he ran that extra 20 yards and put his shoulder down and got into the end zone. So.
All right.
Ready to go.
Big play.
So, hey, thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Scott writes in from what? You did that thing with your hand again, Dan.
I was flipping off the telephone.
Why were you flipping off the telephone? What did it do to you?
Up there? That's where the phone is?
No, the phone's up there, and we got a new phone. Why do we have a new phone?
Oh, we got a new phone.
When he hangs up, there's a button over there that he hits.
Why do we have a new phone? I just asked you a question.
Because the old phone wasn't ours.
Oh, really?
Whose was it? Oh.
I'm guessing it was Gary's.
Scott is from Kennesaw, Georgia. He says, I didn't get to see the game on Sunday, but it appeared that several of the younger players had significant snaps. Are these guys showing improvement each week, and do you think that any of them have the ability to become long-term starters? Also, with it being a big week for rivalries in college football, are there any interesting bets or exchanges taking place? I would especially like to know how fellow Georgia Tech alums Guyton and Robertson have dealt with Seymour and Watson.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure Seymour and Watson know who Robertson is at this point. He's been here less than a week. So I don't think there's a lot of bets going on.
I don't know. I don't know. It might be something we can look into this week.
Sure.
A lot of times, talk to Darryl. Yeah, a lot of times we do ask them about big games. Obviously, Welker was talking a lot about the Texas Tech-Oklahoma game last week. And
now he's not talking anymore.
Probably not talking about it too much more. Fred, how about that nod?
That was awful.
I gave you the nod. First ever nod in a nothing-nothing game.
Yep.
I told you the game was over and it wouldn't be close just based on the first three plays.
Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. Okay, Fred, it's that time. Time to take the gloves off Castle and let the raping and pillaging begin. Our only hope for the playoffs lay in the offense's ability to outscore our opponents. The soft underbelly between our two slow linebackers and our can't-cover-anybody-in-the-middle-of-the-field DBs leaves us no choice but to try and outscore them. Yes, I know there are some defenses that will be much tougher than others, such as Pittsburgh, but our defense hasn't made a big-time stop in a big game since Super Bowl 39. Say it ain't so, Fred, and Hall of Famer Paul will tell you it is. Thanks for the best show in all of football. Well,
you're welcome.
That's what you guys have been saying. I don't know how much trust in the defense.
But I don't know how much more you could take the gloves off Castle. Take, you know,
60.
Take the reins off him. He's
65.
That's as much of a passing game as you could ever get Sunday. That was empty backfield, what, 75% of the snaps?
To be fair, if you score 40 points, you're going to win a lot of games, and with this defense.
And if you take out, what's it was 38-28 when Pennington overthrew Camarillo on that play that he got him hurt. He was wide open.
You mean Welker, too?
He was wide open, by the way.
I was pooping.
If that ends up being a catch and then Miami does what it did the rest of the game and continues down the field and scores, chances are Castle would have thrown 55 passes because all the runs came from that point on. They hadn't run the ball at all until they had that 10-point lead with the ball late in the fourth quarter deep in Miami territory. I'll bet you more than half of their runs for the day came from that point on in the game. Seven in a row for Green Ellis. Morris got hurt on a play after that.
Yep.
By the way, that could be a significant injury, too.
I know. He's like made out of glass, that guy.
I don't think he's made out of glass.
I just shook my head.
I'm sitting there going, get up.
You know, there are times where guys get injured, Fred. I know you never believe a guy is really hurt.
There's certain guys that get injured all the time. And I'm sick of it.
But, I mean, he had pretty legitimate injuries.
All right.
One, he had his chest removed from his clavicle.
All right.
You know, he hurt his knee. I mean,
where's Lamont Jordan?
Sleeping in the locker room, probably.
I don't know what the deal with Lamont Jordan
is. Now, if you want to say made of glass and can't come back,
you know what's
from
funny?
High ankle sprain, whatever, that's fine.
There's a guy who calls the pregame show every week on EEI, and he also calls the wine line when I'm on. And he makes fun of me because about 3 weeks ago I said that Jordan's a pretty tough guy, and I think he's close and could be back. And every week they deem him doubtful or out.
Right.
And he calls in and says, Paul Perillo, right again. He's a real tough guy. He's coming back.
Oh, is he the guy that goes, I think Brady's going to return before Jordan?
Yes. That's pretty funny. Whoever it is very funny. Makes me laugh a different way every week.
Alex writes in. He's got a rant. The Pats win in their house of horrors with 500 yards of offense. We're witnessing the birth of a new millionaire. We're out of the playoffs but with the division within our reach. And the Patriots Monday talks about Jorge Posada. In the immortal words of Mike Felger, give me a break.
Wow.
Well, that's Patriots Monday.
I didn't hear any of the Patriots Monday yesterday.
Well, weren't they promoting? They were promoting their own story probably because EEI.com had a thing about a Verity.
Give me a break.
So there was probably a little synergistic cross-promotion.
What, you're thinking of getting Jorge Posada here?
No. Jorge Posada's contract is supposedly what Boris is using as the bar for Veritech, and EEI.com reported that
Who
the Red
cares?
Sox offered Veritek
Jason
1 year.
Jason Veritek, jeez. If I was the Red Sox, I wouldn't
Boring.
Even, and I saw Scott Boras on my answer, I wouldn't even pick it up. I wouldn't pick up the phone.
Okay.
What? Screw what? Jason Veritek.
What? Do you think a catcher could actually call for a fastball or a curve? You think another catcher could do that?
I don't think as well as Jason Veritek.
Wow.
I mean, the way he does it, oh, my God.
And
the high socks and the crew cut, oh.
I just think poor Jason Veritek. He was built up by the media.
I know.
Now he's being torn down by the media and the
not
fans.
By the
he's
media.
Our captain.
He's not being torn down by the media.
All he did was be the same exact guy the whole time.
Oh, he's
forgot
he's
how to hit.
Come on. He's hitting 55
points below
his average.
I mean, he just played. He never said, like, my value is in the fact that I make young pitchers better.
Well, media doesn't rip
the first time around, he said some things.
When he's trying to get paid, I got no problem with that either.
But the media
built him
has
up,
his back.
And now,
they have
some
back.
People
they say
rip
that,
him.
How can you get rid of him? What a game he calls. You think anybody could do that? And I'm
who's the media?
Yeah.
Who's the media? I've heard some people rip
EEI.
Him. Well, they're not the media. They're the clowns.
But the people that talk about this stuff, Sean McAdam, Tony Maz, Rob Bradford. My God, Rob Bradford. He should. Veritek should
I'll
have
say
to pay.
I was going to say, way to go with this.
Veritek should have to pay him after some of those diatribes he goes on. I mean, it's unbelievable. All the people that cover the Red Sox are all in agreement. You have to have Veritek back, and I don't get it. The guy hits 218. I don't get it.
I don't either.
You can't get a guy who can hit 230 and call a game.
Right. Alex says this was a weird blowout week that got me thinking about the word parity.
It's not possible.
What does the NFL think is parity? One, close games. Two, frequent upsets. Or three, each team finishing as close to 500 as possible.
Yes.
I think on any given Sunday.
I think
parity.
The any given Sunday.
Yeah.
They don't want everybody to go 8-8. That's kind of
the
common misperception that Pete Rozelle wanted parity and that meant that all the teams were even. No, he wants there to be sort of an equity between the worst the worst team in the league can go into the best team in the league and be competitive.
And at the beginning of each season, every team has a chance. You know, unlike and I know in baseball it's kind of a myth that it's always the Red Sox and the Yankees, but it seems that way
let's put it this way. There are a lot more repeat NFL winners in the last 10 years than the zero repeat baseball winners there have been.
And it is always the Red Sox and the Yankees. It's just the other teams always alternate in baseball, like the Twins and the whatever year.
But they might make the playoffs, but they don't get there all the time.
That's my point.
You know, there's a big difference. Like
But it's nice to be able to pencil in every year that you're going to be in the playoffs.
The Patriots and Colts do that.
Right.
But they don't always get there.
That's why I like it. I like having good teams.
Pete from Hoboken writes in, and this is a nice little testimonial email. He says, I just wanted to thank you all for the amazing Qdoba Buffet.
Oh,
it was
excellent.
A veritable taco fiesta at Harvard Stadium on Saturday morning.
For the game?
Yeah. That's
huge.
We had over 25 people come to our annual Harvard-Yale tailgate, and the Qdoba Hut Bar helped us brave the below-freezing conditions. I can tell you that we have earned some new PFW in Progress listeners thanks to the successful Qdoba feast.
Yes.
That's excellent.
That's great. So
that's
thank
the best
you
email we've
to
gotten
PFW
in a long time.
And to Matt Weiss and all the good folks at Qdoba.
Good job,
and
Matt.
And even sends pictures, which I don't have.
Is that Pete?
Pete from Hoboken.
That's excellent. I was wondering like how that was going because I know we got a few emails. When can I get it? How do I get it? There's a guy to put it to
use. At the game.
That's the
at
perfect
the Harvard
use
Yale
for
game.
It.
That's the perfect use for it.
Maybe we can get some
do
Ivy League listeners.
Do that at Parsons Field next year, Andy. You're invited. As you know, it's an open invitation.
Do they have
any
room
game,
to tailgate at Parsons
every game
Field?
You want to know. Yeah, well, you have to know someone like me.
Yeah, I don't. The neighbors don't like it, right?
Well, they have room inside. That you have to get a pass.
You
so
a pass.
I could get you in, Fred. Okay. Again, open invitation to my legion.
I guess is I could call
PFW.
And
I got that going for you now.
No, you couldn't. Seriously, you couldn't.
There's they don't let anybody come to games?
They let, but to tailgate, you'd be on the street. There's only
literally
a handful of spots
on the side
inside.
Of the street, this field.
There's only a handful of parking spots, and you need a pass to get
I just
one.
Figured that they were the type of place that wouldn't turn down anybody for anything. Kind of like a Reds game.
I'm talking about tailgating.
If
I'm
I call the
Reds
room
and
say
tailgate.
I need a luxury suite,
room,
I bet you they
room
don't.
To get in the game?
In the middle of a neighborhood.
But
room to get in the game.
Anybody.
Oh, yeah. If you call up and say, I want to go to the game Saturday, what time? They'll say, what time can you get here?
As luck would have it, we just had 30 come available.
What time's the game Saturday? What time can you get here?
What time can you get here?
Yeah, we can delay it 5 minutes.
Matt from Connecticut, if you want to see Castle's progression, one play stands out in my mind, and it wasn't even a completion. On the first drive of the game, I believe it was third down, and the pocket collapsed on Castle. Instead of tucking it in like he used to do, he stepped up and made a throw, I believe, to Gaffney. It was incomplete, but it shows that Castle isn't just trying to not make mistakes, but is instead trying to make plays to win the game. And, Fred, you must have been really impressed with Castle because in your post-game analysis, you said Castle had a monster game with 415 yards passing, 43 of 30 with three touchdowns.
43 of 30.
I must have transcoded the 43 and the 30.
Well, either that or you transposed them. But
transcoded.
How many times did he just say Castle, 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 and then have a Matt Castle about eight paragraphs in?
No.
You don't do that anymore?
Someone's at the door.
Hey, this is Vince Wilfork. Now it's time for what? I ain't doing this.
This is apparently for this week's game, Pittsburgh Steelers on Tap. It's the Pittsburgh Hot Pocket. That's Pittsburgh Hot Pocket, and it is downright disgusting.
Wow. Pittsburgh Hot Pocket.
It involves feces and pierogies and urine-filled Iron City beer
bottles. We didn't need to know that.
I thought you needed to.
All right, let's see. Chris writes in, I always felt the only reason the Patriots lost to Miami was the Wildcat offense. Let's face it, Miami was never in the game. New York kept them in the game with two turnovers. New England owned Miami. All they had was the Wildcat, and when that didn't work, they abandoned it, and their offense couldn't compete. And Matt Light got the wrong guy. Joey Porter was 55, not 52.
Did he just say the Miami offense couldn't compete?
Yeah, I'm not buying it. They did
340 yards for Chad Pennington. And, oh, by the way, he went whatever it was the first time around without the Wildcat, 18 of 20. That passing game has eaten up the Patriots secondary all year long. The Wildcat made big plays and was a big part of the first win. But to say that offense couldn't do anything against the defense, I mean, this was a shootout that got a little out of hand for the Dolphins late because they had some penalties and, you know, they threw the interception. But they were stride for stride with the Patriots for more than a half of that game.
It was back in six lead changes.
I mean,
you know, six lead changes.
Anybody who thinks the Patriots defense right now is capable of doing anything it wants in any area, I think is
against
is
a decent quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, to me, at this point, an admission that, yeah, we got to score points because the defense is going to lose its battle more often than not.
Jeff in Tingsboro says our show is the best.
Thanks.
It looked like Mike Vrabel got a good hit on Chad Pennington late in the game. Was that a little payback for all of the hits Matt Castle took? Do teams keep score of these things?
No, they try to play physical football.
I don't think there was any cheap hits or late hits by either team, really, as far as the quarterbacks went.
Yeah, I don't recall any.
Chris also says, Tony Sperano said, I guess we have a rivalry now. Without the Wildcat, they couldn't beat us. Does that sound like a rivalry? Let's face it, took an unseen offense for them to beat the Patriots. That doesn't sound like a rivalry to New England.
Is this the same guy?
Can we just
Or are these other people who just
No,
missed,
that's the same, like, guy, same
the,
guy.
The 560 yards of passing offense and Pennington going like 40 for 45 in the two games.
Same guy. Just one guy. Just one guy saying that.
Can we? I mean, that's foolishness. First of all, if you want to look at the rivalry, Miami has dominated the Patriots over the course of time. Okay, the fact that they've been ridiculously down recently and still found a way to win a few games is pretty impressive. I mean, they were a terrible, terrible team in 04 and beat them down there. Remember?
Yep.
The 29-28 game.
Yep.
They split this year with a team that I think is not very long on talent.
Nope.
That's a rivalry. That's a division rivalry. That's a tough game when you play the Miami Dolphins. Last year was the only time that I can remember not having to sweat out at least one of the two games against Miami.
Ryan writes in. He says, what do you think the chances of Crennel coming back if he gets fired?
Better than 50-50.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think there's going to be some turnover on the defensive coaching staff. I know we joked about it, but I don't think Dean Pease is totally solidified at coordinator. I don't think they've had a good year in general. There's been injuries involved, but I'm not sure the coaching's been the best. Dom Capers, my guess, is here on a one-year deal and could go anywhere at any time to do any job. So I think there might be some opening there on defense. And I don't think he left with any ill will of any kind.
Yeah,
I think he's always been a good coach here.
There's no bridge that I know of.
What would you rather if you were Romeo Crennel? Come back to the Patriots as defensive coordinator or take a head coach college job?
If I was Romeo, I'd rather come back as a defensive coordinator because I think that's too much of a change.
Yeah, he doesn't know the college. Yeah,
yeah.
But
I'm not sure that I actually think that this might be the end of the road for him too. He might just decide, yeah, I had a good career.
Yeah, okay.
And he might just come back as special assistant to the head coach defense.
Good.
I mean, Pease could still be here. Capers could leave. They hire a secondary coach, and Romeo comes on as just a, you know, the Dante Scarnecchia assistant
head
coach.
What's the title for Capers?
Special assistant secondary. I think.
Maybe he's special assistant and someone else comes in. Like
he could go to Obama's team, maybe part of the economic dream team.
But, you know, Romeo's no young guy either. He waited a long time to get a head coaching job. He probably figures he's not going to get a second one because he's going to – first of all, he wasn't that successful, and he's not young enough probably. He might just decide, I had a good long career in coaching. It was successful.
Yeah.
Now, if he still has that burning desire to coach and loves that aspect of it, then he probably will come back to the Patriots.
I say he's back.
Okay. Emily writes in, Matt Castle has looked pretty good the last few games. Granted, he was playing against weak secondaries. Last year, a lot of people thought that the Steelers secondary would bring Tom Brady back down to earth. That didn't happen. How do you think Castle will do against the Steelers secondary? Are we going to see another big passing game, or will he go back to managing the game? And can you also talk about Brandon Merriweather? It looks like he has improved a lot since last year. How do you think he's been doing? P.S., can you make sure Dan gets the podcast up by 3 p.m.? Because I'm flying down to Orlando, and I need some free in-flight entertainment.
Dan, make sure you get it up. Get it to Ferreira.
So,
blow her off.
Can,
do it.
I can't think Castle
Steelers,
have success
the secondary
the
stinks, and yeah. It stunk last year even worse. Statistically, I know they have the number one ranked pass defense, but that's all a result of the pressure they put on the passer. I wish there wasn't just 5 minutes left because there's a column that was written yesterday by Dan Shaughnessy, and I wanted to get your opinion. Do you guys think that calling a quarterback a good game manager is an insult?
No, but I think some quarterbacks do.
Fred, do you think it's an insult?
Well, you have to be that in addition to other things to be great.
Couldn't agree with you more.
You know,
I think Matt Castle did an unbelievably good job of managing the game Sunday.
Absolutely.
The game was
but
put in his hands.
They take it as an offense.
He didn't. He said, that's my number one job every week is to manage the game.
No, but there are quarterbacks that, oh, I'm not just a game manager. And there's players that talk about their own guy. You think you can see he's not just a game manager.
I think the system thing is more of an insult. That stigma of he can only do it in this kind of environment. If you ask him to do other things, he can't do it. He's a system quarterback. But game manager to me is being up to date on the pre-snap reads, the time, getting first downs, converting third downs, knowing when to take a chance with a ball, knowing when it's okay to sort of force a ball into coverage and knowing when you can't afford a turn. I think that's game managing. But I think that people look at – I guess Shaughnessy's right then. I thought he was off base. But if you look at it like that people think that's an insult, then I guess I'm wrong. I think that's the number one compliment you could give a quarterback.
See, I think most
he manages his situations well. That's what I think Brady's biggest strengths are, and Peyton Manning as well.
Unfortunately, the connotation of game manager has become I just do what I'm told to do, and I don't have any improvisation. I don't know what to do when things break down.
Oh,
and I think it implies a lack of making plays. You take plays and you just kind of distribute the ball, but you aren't capable
right.
of
making
a play.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I think the connotation is.
Well, if that's the connotation, then I guess I can see where Shaughnessy's coming from. I don't look at it like that at all. I look at it as that's the guy does the right thing more often than not.
I think Phil Simms was a game manager, but he was, he's revered in New York. He's one of the best quarterbacks they ever
had. I think Phil Simms was a system quarterback. I think if you ask Phil Simms to spread it five wide and do what Castle did on Sunday, no chance.
He's got 200, 400-yard games, though. 2 400-yard
games. Yeah, I'm aware of that.
He's in the club.
He's in the five pack.
But I think that he was.
Now, how many people have done it three times in a row?
I don't think anyone.
I don't think anyone.
Ah,
if he does it three times in a row, then the price tag just went up even more.
Just so you know, there's only a choice of three of those four other guys. So
that's true. Now Marino could be one of those guys or Fouts. He had some big years. Now, if he does that,
but I think
you know what
Sims,
he needs to do to impress me? Throw for 300 yards. That's something he's never done. You know, he's never thrown for 300 yards.
Phil Simms
well,
was
he has on his way to 400,
but never stopped in the threes.
Right. He just kept going.
He's never had a 300-yard passing game.
All right. Well, if he blows up the
Pittsburgh
defense.
By the way, they only had three first downs again on Sunday.
Well, if you think the talk
last
this week
game
is,
and a half
is
or something
kind of nutty.
Third down conversions. They don't convert on third down. It's really going to bite them in the butt one of these times when they don't put up 500 yards of offense.
If you think the talk this week is a little nutty, if he blows up the Pittsburgh defense next week, it's going to get crazy.
And worthy because whatever you think of the secondary, they're a good defense. They're a good physical defense and a challenge for this offense. And if he puts up not 400, not 500 yards total offense.
320.
But if he throws three touchdowns and, doesn't have a pick or has another pick like he had this week, it's going to be another notch in his bedpost.
Yeah. Wow, notch in his bedpost. He's not sleeping with the defense. He's just, playing against them. All right, that's going to be it for this edition of PFW in Progress. We will see you tomorrow, Wednesday, our last show of the week, so you better be here. Talk to you then.